This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We call it the place to be.
Place to be, yes.
The place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
I know that I should be sleeping, but maybe he's not far away. So out of the window.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am co-host Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, and of course we are post-Thanksgiving, Scott Criscola, so that means the Christmas music is playing us in and out here tonight for a very special edition of our Vintage Vault. How are you?
Correct, JR. Good evening. Great weekend it was, sir. We'll talk about that in a second. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 471 of the longest running, continuously, never-ending, even if it's 20 years from now, episodic gold.
It's like crazy.
No, I'm saying that might take as long as it takes to get to 500.
Oh, maybe, yes.
yes, JR, nice Christmas music in the background. We are in the season, sir.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice, of course, that means that I was in Studio A this weekend. Blast as always, sir.
Yes.
So, a lot of good times, feeling good. Football yesterday.
Yeah, how you feeling? You holding up?
A little sore. Yeah, I'm good. Legs a little sore, but nothing usual nonsense. But otherwise, good. Beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
Nice shindig on Friday. A little Friar win on Saturday night. And
good job, the AARP Rock for the Ages cam.
That's right. I feel great. I should have been on the fucking screen, but
you're gonna earn that Carlson Circle Thanksgiving weekend football pension soon.
That's right. That's right. I should be part of the league the league deal, but
not part of the lawsuit, concussion lawsuit.
at least we all parked our cars right. Anyway, it was a great weekend as always, JR. It was a pleasure to hang out with you and the gang,
mm-hmm.
and got to hang out with this guy.
Yeah.
For part of the weekend, sir. Why don't we bring our special third party this evening to get us ready for our big show?
Yeah, the man who doesn't hang his stocking from the mantle hangs it from elsewhere. That is, of course, the one and only John D'Amato. Johnny, how are you, sir?
Great, guys. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving, and thanks for having me, and thanks for having me on to talk about one of my favorite nights ever, and I'm very humbled to talk about it. You know me. I'm just a guy on the street.
That's right. Just a guy on the street, as Dusty Rhodes once said. Yeah, it's a big show, and we laid a lot of the groundwork a week ago when we had this threesome here along with Pete Schermacher and Kelly Nelson on to really hype the biggest matches we're going to be talking about tonight. And we did that for two reasons. One, because we thought it would be fun. And two, because it would take a little bit of the pressure off tonight to really have to dive into the background of those two matches, save us some time. So if you haven't listened to episode 470 yet, you may want to pause and go back. Because it really helps bridge the gap to this show, and B, it was a really fun show to do, and I got a lot of praise around the internet for a really fun listen, and John, you and Kelly and Pete really brought the A game, and Kelly did a great job curating the playlist for us to watch, and it was a real good time. So I definitely recommend listening to that episode if you haven't yet, and it really sets the stage for what here tonight, Scott.
That's right, because JR, and the other thing is obviously being our 471st episode, you and I have always sat and talked in production meetings and just sitting back and reflecting on what we've done over the past almost, Jesus, 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
That some of our earlier episodes probably could use a little cleaning up. So when we weren't quite sure what we were doing.
Even beyond just that, like the formatics, as some may say, or the like technical aspects of it, is also our opinions. We've grown a lot over the last 7 years. We've
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I think the internet wrestling community, as it may be, in many ways has grown and developed a different mindset in the way they look at matches and shows, or at least it wasn't as widely talked about when we were doing WrestleMania 3 originally back in 2011. A lot has changed just from our perspectives as well. And so that's a big part of the reason why we went back on this journey back to 85. Now, the way we're doing it with all the Saturday Night's Main Events and house shows, is that we're not just doing straight rehashes of what we've done, but there are going to be shows like this that we have done in the past and we're redoing, and I think it's fine. I think it's good because, again,
absolutely,
our opinions have changed greatly. I know mine have on a few of these matches. And I think we're more well-versed because we've, you know, back then we didn't watch all the build. I don't know if we even watched the show. We just talked about it. So, you know, now we've watched all the lead up and watched the show itself again and taken fresh notes, fresh eyes. So I think it's, you know, we're doing it in a way that's making it worthwhile to redo it. So
absolutely. And of course, what we didn't have is great you know, extra analysis yes, from obviously from Johnny and mm-hmm. Pete and Kelly and everybody, so that's also a bonus. But as you can hear, our show tonight is the big one, and that is WrestleMania 3, what many consider the zenith of the Federation era. We're finally here. We're here in Pontiac. The date is March 29th, of course, 1987, from the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan. Of course, no one else was anywhere. There were no other shows running that night. Everybody was there.
Paul Orndorff was main eventing some show somewhere.
Paul Orndorff was in Saskatoon or something. This is it. This is the biggest show. I mean, the first two WrestleManias, I mean, WrestleMania 1 has its own kind of feeling. WrestleMania 2, I feel like we found more advantages and more mm-hmm. pluses than we had before. But, of course, Vince might have bit off a little more than he can chew on that show. But here, I think he figured out what a super show needed to be, and we're going to talk about that tonight. Your announcers, of course, the guys that they did WrestleMania 1 together. They mm-hmm. were probably about 1,500 to 2,000 miles apart. At WrestleMania 2, but they are back together in the saddle, and that is, of course, Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura. What was the last non-Serence main event Jesse did for us, JR? When was the last time he was at the Garden? It's been a while, right?
I feel it was maybe like late 85.
Yeah, he hasn't been at the Gardens in a while. So he's back. We've got plenty of celebrities. Not plenty, actually. Two main ones that are in the pantheon of great WrestleMania celebrities. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, I want to keep – when we get to the Manias, I want to promote this because I actually was looking at them today. Go back to placementnation.com, maybe while you're listening to this, and go back to the Listomania lists we did earlier this year. Earlier this year when we did a bunch of topics and a bunch of categories, and we did 33 top 10 lists of various WrestleMania. And take a look and see where certain things from this show lie, because I was looking at them today while I was watching it, and I was surprised at where this show, in terms of itself and some of the parts of it, lied.
If you really want the controversial look at this show, go back to the year before when we ranked every WrestleMania match ever, and
yes,
you can look at where some of those matches fell, and then you can hear the podcast where we talked about them. I think it was episode, was it 400 where we did the breakdown of the list?
I will take a look.
It may have been. And then also The Descent with Glenn Butler, Podcast Hour Spectacular. They went through and broke down why the list was stupid. So you can enjoy that too if you want, if you're of that ilk. So enjoy that one as well. So yes, a lot of WrestleMania themed stuff. But yeah, here we are, Scott. So why don't we go ahead and dive into the show? Of course, the attendance is always a little bit of back and forth based on the source. Some have said 78,000. Some have said 93,000, which is the kind of famous number that they give out during the show and that they have lived by from a company standpoint. Those who have promoted the show and taken that as word has said it's closer to around 78. Either way, super impressive.
Yeah.
Quick tidbit before you get into it. It was a 4 p.m. start. They haven't nestled into that Sunday evening slot yet, where WrestleMania 1 started at 1 p.m. and WrestleMania 2, of course, was on a Monday night. So here it started at 4 p.m.
And it actually stays. I don't think it's until WrestleMania 11 in 95 when all the pay-per-views get standardized that they become all Sunday night, because they are still like all over the map. I know for sure WrestleMania 10 I think was at 4. WrestleMania 8 I know was in the afternoon as well.
Yep.
So
WrestleMania 9 was definitely in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I remember watching that.
So
Dr. J and I watched.
And of course things come full circle. This year it's probably gonna start at noon.
4 o'clock. Yeah. Well, it's gonna end at midnight instead of 7. All right, so here we go. Scott, why don't you set up our first match? Or do I do that now?
I do that. But I'll lead you in. We will open the show, JR, with a fresh team. A little tag team action here. Fresh team.
Oh, actually, you know what? We got something to talk about really quick before we get to that. We're out of practice on these pay-per-views. Of course, Vince McMahon is in the ring. Very emotional opening. He's standing looking at the crowd. Just this massive show with a massive build, massive arena. Really, I think it's what WrestleMania was meant to be in his mind when he created it. As great as MSG was and the three city thing, like I think when he's standing in the ring and looking at this monstrous arena and what's about to go down, I think this is probably what he imagined, like back in 1985 or whenever it was that he started percolating this idea. But he brings out the one and only Motown legend Aretha Franklin to sing "America the Beautiful," and she does a great job. I think you referenced that Listomania from earlier this year, and I think she ranked pretty highly on the "America the Beautiful" singing. So she's out there belting that out. And then Gorilla Jesse and our two main celebrity guests for the night, Bob Uecker and Mary Hart, welcome us to the show and kind of set the tone.
Well, you have to, before we do that, as Johnny knows, we have to say it the right way, who did America the Beautiful.
Yes, that's true.
Miss Aretha Franklin! And then Gorilla's up in the booth going, fucking bitch. Because as we know there, I guess there's an urban legend that that she was, you know, typical Aretha Franklin, I suppose. And, yes, and Gorilla was not an
autograph. Well, I think he wanted an autograph for his kid or something, and she blew him off. And the story goes that because on primetime, like, the, I don't know if it's the one right after or the next week, he just, like, buries her. He says, like, her performance left a lot to be desired or whatever. It's like, yeah, it shits out on primetime.
It's pretty funny. And I said it to you guys today in our chat when we were talking about the show. That opening shot, I think I think Vince afterwards just looked at that and realized, because that opening shot right after the with the great jazz music and everything, and that panning of the building, and just the sea of humanity. I can just imagine. And Vince has said it in interviews that he felt the presence of his dad in the ring. Because I think this was kind of what his dad, his dad was close. I mean, he had Showdown at Shea in 1980, which had 50-something thousand at Shea for, you know, Bruno and Bruno, Larry in the cage and Hogan, Andre and that. But, that wasn't meant to be. Wasn't supposed to happen yet. So I think just emotionally, John, and you know, and agree with me, you could see, like, Vince never tipped his emotions, when he was on camera, but you could definitely tell when he said welcome to WrestleMania 3 and he had that look on his face that he knew that it took me some time, but I finally got here.
Oh, definitely. That crowd gave him an adrenaline rush. He did a real heavy welcome to wrestling. That really came from deep.
All right. So in our opener, a team that we first saw back in January, the Can-Am Connection, Rick Martel and Tom Zenk. We saw them back in MSG in January, like I mentioned, and they are taking on the erstwhile team of veterans Don Morocco and Bob Orton. And obviously Morocco and Orton kind of forged a friendship during the whole Piper turn stuff going on back in the fall. They just kind of stuck together here and hung out as a team. Now the Orton kind of without Piper, and Morocco is really man without a feud, so they work together now for a while. Good choice for an opener here, I thought, because the Can-Ams can fire up the crowd. And Morocco and Orton can stooge around. With Adonis really fading quickly, Morocco and Orton kind of feel directionless, just kind of hanging around with Fuji. Martel and Morocco open up with some back and forth that Martel eventually controls. Morocco's is massive here, by the way. He's really bulked up over the last few months. Martel keeps Morocco rocking on his heels and tags Zenk, and they hit a double monkey flip. Orton comes in and gets rattled too, and they bail to regroup with Fuji. We reset with Zenk working over Orton's arm, and eventually Morocco comes in and clobbers his partner by accident. The Can-Ams double team a bit, and they keep battering the arm until Morocco catches the tag. The tide finally turns when Orton catches Zenk in the back with a knee from the apron, and Morocco follows with a neck breaker. Orton comes in and hammers away until two guys crack skulls. Both make tags, and Martel comes in hot, beating on Morocco and shooting him hard to the corner. Things broke down with a hot brawl that ended with the Can-Ams double drop kick and Martel catching Morocco with a crossbody block for the win. And that was a pretty nifty finish. The crowd loved it. Basically a squash show. It really had to be kept short to get the show moving and keep it chugging along. Perfect choice for an opener. Morocco and Orton easily sacrificed at this point. They're not really going anywhere. And the Can-Ams got a big win on the big stage. So I went 2 stars on this, Scott.
Just to give a recap, it was episode 400.
Okay.
We did the match rankings, and Leanne Griffin was on.
There you go.
Yeah, she's in there. Hulk Hogan, you know what the description says? Hulk Hogan versus Gawker.
Yes.
What we're talking about right
now.
That
was the big lawsuit. Yeah, we talked to Leanne about it.
Yes, this is your opener. Your official runtime, 5:36. I gave it 2 stars.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fine opener. Obviously, Morocco and Orton feel dated here, because obviously, you know, they're you know, a little off the radar. I mean, you know, Morocco's been on a decent amount. Orton's been pretty much cooked for a couple months now. Yeah. This was obviously a showcase for this new fresh team of Zenk and Martel. I always find it funny when guys like Rick Martel are considered youngsters. Everybody's a anybody who wasn't in the business longer than a year is a youngster in yeah. In Gorilla's eyes. Everybody's a youngster. But I mean, it was a solid enough match.
In a way, I guess it's a shrewd way to promote the guys, right? That the young. I mean, you know, not old.
Oh, absolutely. You know, but I mean, we know for those that have even back then, and Johnny would attest this too. We knew that Martel was, you know, in the AWA that, but it's just funny that he calls him a youngster.
Well, he's no Carlos Colon.
No,
well, that's true, yeah. I mean, but he acts like he's a rookie. But I mean, it's funny.
But not everyone. I mean, I think we have to look at it in a way that they were really producing a product aimed at not people who were watching 7 years earlier. They just weren't. Like, I think it's similar to today, right? They're treating, starting with like WrestleMania 1, they are treating their audience like they're brand new from 1985 almost. You know, so it's like they're constantly, and we see this in Saturday's Main Event, we talked about it. They're constantly teaching and acting like, you know, these are new guys, these are young guys, here's the hip products, you know, here's what you want to be, rock and wrestling, we're for the kids. Like, they're just constantly refreshing for what they consider to be a new audience. They're not really catering to fans that have been around for 7 years, 8 years, nine years.
No, it makes sense. I just, it's
in John's case, 35 years, whatever.
I mean, the match was good. Morocco actually looked in pretty good shape. I feel like a lot of the, you know, bloat that he carried in most of 86 seemed to be gone, but we know what he was doing to stop that. Mm-hmm. Zinc and Morocco were good. Crowd was, the crowd was just getting started. So it wasn't crazy loud. But they were, you know, they were into it. Again, safe opener. Orton and Morocco definitely felt, you know, that they were towards the end of the line, and the K&Ams were a team that you were going to follow throughout 1987. So I gave it 2 stars. Fine opener, John.
Yeah, me too. I'm with you guys. 2 stars. But the first thing that catches right off my mind is it's a big step down from Ace. He was like a part of a main event in WrestleMania 1 and in WrestleMania 2, he was part of the co-main event. So this is kind of step down for him, jerking the curtain. And also, Orton and Morocco, they got very little offense. And this is really just a showcase for mm-hmm. K&M. And I think they had big ideas for Zinc. He really blew it. He was dissatisfied and kind of left shortly after. But he could have been a tag team stud for the longest. He was made. He had the looks and everything, the chick screaming for him and the moves. So he was really impressive here. It's a shame what happened later on. And like you said at the top, Scott, right away, Gorilla and Jesse, they were like, "Oh, Jesse, I haven't seen you for a while." They were like two lovers that just got back together
on the Lido deck.
Because Jesse was off doing movies, so they haven't really hooked up on those MSG house shows. There was a lot in '85, but not too much in late 86 and 87, so then you could tell they were like happy and juiced up to get back together.
Yeah, for sure. And you made a good point too on the offense or in a, I mean, it's essentially a 5-minute squash. I mean, it really is. And Morocco and Orton are stooging around like crazy too. They look kind of like goofs. So
and
it's
also,
interesting.
That's it's a foreshadowing of you see the card is bloated with 12 matches. So you could tell that they have to go to some abbreviated finishes right. in order to get everything in time wise.
Yeah, it's not like MSG where these guys probably would have gotten 20 or whatever, 18 or whatever. But yeah, so there you go. Solid opener, and we continue on here.
And what's funny is if it was like 15 or 16 minutes, it probably wouldn't even have been that bad, to be honest with you.
No, it would have been really good. It probably would have been better because you would have gotten a heat segment and some, you know, tag work and some heel work.
Yeah, Morocco would have got more, they would have more offensive because they hardly got any.
Yeah, no, it would have been better. All right, so we go backstage where Mean Gene is with Hercules and Bobby Heenan about the match tonight. Herc says they'll make Billy Jack Haynes feel fear and wrath as we find out who the true master of the Phil Nelson is, and that does bring us into our battle over the Phil Nelson as Billy Jack Haynes takes on the mighty Hercules. A big power feud over the Phil Nelson that started back in late 86. Remember, we saw a really good match between them at MSG. I think it was like either September or October that we really liked. We'll see if this holds up as well. Billy Jack gets a nice welcome as he rides down to the ring. And we should mention that too, guys. The little rolling carts make their debut here tonight on Raw, where guys enter the ring on a motorized cart. shaped like a ring. He's wearing an absurd hat and choker combo. This was, I mean, if you're trying to get over, I mean, I guess it depends what the kind of community you're trying to get over with, but I just didn't think the tight green choker around his neck and the goofy hat was really the strongest look for Billy Jack. He looked like a mascot at, like, O'Shea's in Vegas or something. He's got, like, the green fucking Lucky Charms jacket on.
That's a fucking walking around with the midgets.
Right, I mean, he should just be out there, like, slinging dollar Guinnesses or something. Like, that's what he looked like he was dressed as, just this... The fucking choker was ridiculous. So anyway, Gorilla notes that the full Nelson wasn't in Herc's arsenal when he first arrived, and Jesse puts over how well he's developed. We open with a stare down and lock up, but the ref tries to break it up. Herc lands a stiff knee to the gut. Hercules whiffs on a charge, and Billy Jack unloads with chops and breaks out a nice press slam. He goes for the full Nelson, but Herc slithers away and gets to the ropes. He then comes back with a hard clothesline and a backdrop as he starts to punish the back to set up the full Nelson. Herc gets a cover, but picks up Billy Jack before three, and Jesse and Gorilla really criticize that decision. Billy Jack mounts a comeback, but he can't hoist Herc for a suplex and collapses to the mat. Herc capitalizes with a backbreaker and follows with a hard slam and then lines up and hooks to Nelson, but Billy Jack keeps the finger separated, allowing him to stay alive in the hold until Herc gives up and just clobbers him in the head. A moment later, we get a double clothesline. Billy Jack recovers first with an inverted atomic drop, but he's favoring his back as he starts to unload some offense before hooking his version of the full Nelson, and he's able to lock the fingers. Hercules gets to the rope, and that ends up with both men tumbling to the floor. Out there, Billy Jack hooks on the Nelson again until we get the bell for the double countout. Heenan breaks the hold by kicking Billy, who then stalks Brain into the ring. Hercules takes advantage, sneaks in from behind, and decks Billy Jack in the head with a chain, busting him wide open. And then puts him in the full Nelson again before leaving him a bloody mess in the ring. Nice power match. I thought it showcased the chemistry these two have. The finish kind of stunk, but I like the post-match activities, and you kind of assume, I guess, this will continue. Herc continues to improve and impress. He's a guy that has gained a lot in my eyes since we've been watching these shows, and he continues to get better and better, especially when controlling heat segments. Not as boring and plotting as you would think. He actually keeps the matches moving well. So I went 2 stars again on this one, John.
Yeah, we see these guys before at the big event also.
That's
along
right.
With the
that
MSG
was
match.
That was the one that was not as good, right? Big event was MSG better.
No,
the big event,
not.
The big event's terrible. Yeah, I gave it a star. You gave it a star and a half, and I'm trying to look and see if there was an MSG match. I can't seem to find one.
Yeah, they definitely had one. Wasn't in I thought it was like September.
No, September. Billy Jack fought Orton, and
August,
Herc.
Maybe?
Let's see.
Haynes for Orton again.
Oh, here we go. Haynes versus Hercules in August. We gave it 2 stars, which I guess for MSG is like 5. So
yeah, no, that was a good match. Yeah, that one. Yeah. It was better than the big event. Yeah.
Yeah. No. They fought in August.
Yeah. With these two guys, so that they fought them well, that's like a recurrent theme for this WrestleMania, as opposed to like WrestleMania 1 and 2, where they kind of just like slapped matches together randomly. With guys that like never wrestled like in 2 with Orndorff and Morocco and random matches in WrestleMania 1 here, they finally figured out that it's best to kind of like culminate all the feuds into the big show of the year. They're really embracing how big the WrestleMania is, and they plan to have this is the first of many where the feuds ended right at the right time, instead of just having two guys that you know, never wrestled before. So these guys went around the horn, and then they were used to working with each other.
You know, I wonder what if it helped, too, with Saturday Night's Main Event becoming more prolific. Because I think with WrestleMania 1 or whatever, like, just getting matches between named guys meant a lot. But now we're kind of a few years into Saturday Night's Main Events. We're kind of getting big name matches more often on TV. So now all of a sudden, just a bout between guys with names, like, isn't enough to satiate. You need some heat behind it. You think that was part of the decision too?
Yeah. Yes. Definitely. And also that they have to get out of the all the mindset of killing the house shows and making money with the house shows. They have to embrace this new way of making money, this pay per view. So they definitely have to make it special, but by building heat and building feuds instead of just sort of throwing just random guys together where the crowd's got nothing behind and there's no history behind. So that was a big improvement, and we'll see that too with a lot of the matches coming up. That there's all history and there's feuds, and they are the interviews, and they show the angles from the syndicated shows leading up to it. And as far as the match, also like you said, that was the first really good shot of the ring cart.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you saw it seemed like it was moving real fast.
It was way faster than I remembered.
It's not like a golf cart at a Criscolo golf tournament. they're really motoring.
It was chugging.
I was impressed by that.
Yeah, it was way faster than I remembered, for sure. And you're right, because the opener, they're already in the ring when we get to the ring. So you're right, it's the first time we see the car. And yeah, those things are fucking flying down there.
And Jesse and Gorilla, they got over their love fest, and they started getting right back into normal, taking shots at each other. Jesse was like, "Hey, Gorilla, you remember 1932, your wrestling days? You know, the Herbert Hoover era." And so they got right back into the swing of things. And also, Herc's blade job was kind of obvious right in front of the camera there.
Yeah.
After he got hit with the chain. Yeah.
The blood in that. With that lighting and the setup, like, looked awesome though. Like, it was just like bright, you know. It was a cool touch that they did it.
But who would have thought that that's the only juice we pretty much get for the night, and it comes from this match.
Billy Jerk.
Your official match time is 7:54. I thought this match was shorter, to be honest. I give it a star and a half. Not as good as the one in August, and. But it wasn't bad. I mean, it served its purpose for these two guys. And I've said all along, and I know Kelly disagrees with me. I didn't have a problem with Billy Jack Haynes until he got here. In fact, I argue, and I think I said it on a past house show, that had he been in the NWA or in Mid-Atlantic in 86, I think he would have been the one that got the rub, from Flair when Magnum got hurt instead of Nikita. But, obviously he had already left. He just had the look. He had that Crockett look. Jacked up dude, you know, decent power moves.
Mullet,
you know,
curly hair.
Mullet, big beard. Yeah, worked perfectly.
Choker.
But I'm surprised.
Crockett would have been into the choker.
Yeah, yes.
You got a tepid response, though, from that crowd. It wasn't really much of a pop at all for the babyface in this match.
No, not really. Yeah. No, I agree with you, John. Not at all. Yeah, those carts were hustling. They definitely put third gear on. And probably Vincent wasn't sure how long he thought that rant that aisle was, so probably wanted to make sure that, you know, we didn't waste time with this nonsense, with the nonsense of taking forever to get to the ring. Obviously, you could tell that Herc had the staying power in the company, and, I mean, you know, even if it ended a double DQ or a double countout, you'd have figured that the babyface would have got the advantage, but it was evident that Billy Jack was probably already pissed off, and they probably weren't thrilled with him in the company anyway, because they really punked him out at the end of this match. And Herc looked pretty good at the end, and I mean the chain shot's pretty stiff too. Mm. And I agree with you, JR. The lighting made the blood look even brighter and grosser than like an MSG blade job or something. So that was pretty cool in that aspect. Yeah, I mean, not much more. The other thing we will notice as the show progresses is that even though at the moment Jimmy is the only heel with titles. This is all about Bobby. This is Bobby's stage, Bobby's guys all over the show. Mm-hmm. And he, as we talked about, JR, in terms of Alpha Dog managers, Bobby is the Alpha Dog manager, and it's evident. I mean, he's all over the show.
For sure.
I mean, he's got at least.
I mean, Jimmy's really the king of the mid card right now. Like, he's got a lot going on there. But yeah, Bobby's the lead dog. He's got all the big top guys.
Absolutely. So, but yeah, the match was fine. Again, I gave it a star and a half. It wasn't anything. It wasn't offensive. It wasn't anything great. It was two power guys that have limited moves. I just realized that obviously Billy Jack is not long for this company because he got punked out pretty bad. And usually, if you're a babyface and you get punked out,
I think he's around for a while more, another year or so. I think.
I feel like I mean I know, but I feel like he's forgotten. Like you never see him again.
Oh yeah.
You know,
it becomes.
We'll see him on the house shows here and there.
Yeah,
but
it's downhill from here.
Yeah, it's pretty much downhill from here. So.
And I love how Jesse and Gorilla are going at it after the match, and Jesse's like, "Yeah, he won the match," and Gorilla's like, "What are you talking about?" And Jesse's like, "Yeah, he won the match after the bell."
Yeah,
the match. After
the best thing about Gorilla and Jesse, I want to piggyback your comment, Johnny, that Gorilla and Jesse would be different than Gorilla's future. Even when Gorilla and Bobby are doing like the garden and stuff, like Gorilla doesn't totally get into Jesse's face like he does Bobby. Like he'll, like when he made the 1932 joke, like Gorilla laughed it off. Like they're almost pals. So as much as Jesse's a heel and Gorilla's the face, they act like two, like, you know, cause they're both former workers and former, you know, locker room boys that they have a different kind of rapport. And that's what I always loved about Gorilla and Jesse. And for that aspect, they were like, even though one's a face, one's a heel, they always have, particularly when the bigger the match gets, and we'll make that point later in the show, the bigger the match gets, not the more even they get in terms of like who they're rooting for, but they definitely amp it up in terms of the seriousness of the moment.
Right.
More than they do in some of these throwaway matches. But
I just think it's sad how much Gorilla loves Jesse and how much Jesse hates Gorilla.
I know. It's so bad.
It's so sad.
Better call Saul.
Let's get to our next match here. Right?
Yeah, so there you go. So Billy, the match ends in a double count. All right, let's go next to our first legit gimmick match of the evening, and certainly one of my favorite WrestleMania moments of all time, JR. What do we got?
Yes, and I meant Jim Barnett with like the choker, not Jim Crockett. Cause that was mixed up.
You had to backtrack on that, didn't you?
I wanted to fix it. I don't want to get a correction email. All right, our next match is a mixed tag of sorts. We have Hillbilly Jim, the last remaining of the Hillbilly Tramp. Tramp is a group thing, right? Hillbilly Triumvirate, whatever. Yeah. Little Beaver and the Haiti Kid taking on King Kong Bundy, Lord Littlebrook, and Little Tokyo. So, yes, it is a couple big guys and four midgets here in our six-man mixed tag. Bob Uecker joins the booth for this midget mania. I drop on for Bundy on paper here from year to year, but the colossal jostle shall live forever as Hillbilly Jim and Kick on Bundy reignite the old war from late 85. Bundy on the car with the midgets is a pretty funny sight. I enjoyed that. Jim's very serious here about protecting his little buddies. We find that out before the bout in a quick interview. Jesse says, despite the rules, if Bundy gets a chance, he will drop the kibosh on a midget. We start with some midget hijinks with all four mixing it up as Uecker is cracking jokes. Uke says he's a Littlebrook fan, and Jesse calls him a wily veteran, while also still hoping Bundy will squash one of them. Bundy eventually comes in and stares down Beaver, who whiffs on a dropkick, tags in Jim to a pop. Bundy hammers away off a lockup, but Jim comes back with a clothesline, an elbow drop for two. Bundy lands a kick and goes back to clubbing blows before hooking a front face lock, and that gets broken up by Beaver. Bundy squashes Jim in the corner as Uke is just making Beaver jokes off to right, talking about how much of a Beaver there is around here. Beaver comes in again, and Bundy grabs and slams him hard to the mat as the crowd is booing loudly. Bundy levels Beaver with a big elbow drop for the DQ. Bundy wants more, but all the midgets band together and rush to Beaver's aid until Jim recovers and fights the big man off. Nothing match at all. But the ending spot's an all-time classic. And in a way, even though Bundy has dropped down the card, it kind of makes it worthwhile because it gives him something enduring. It's a moment that'll last forever. If he had just been thrown in, like just like him versus Jim or something in a random match, you don't get this moment. So in a way, even though he's down the card, it almost ended up working out for him because it becomes a very, very memorable WrestleMania moment that really lived on for years until today. Nice for Jim to get a big slot here, too. He's had a couple of years of yeoman's work on the house shows, and he didn't really get much of a showcase. He wasn't even at, I don't know, I forget if he had started WrestleMania 1 or he started right after, but he wasn't there. And then WrestleMania 2, he was in the Battle Royal, I think. So, I mean, he hasn't really had much of a showcase, so this is a nice spot for him. Fine enough for the gimmickry and was kept brief before the big finish. So I went half a star all for the finish here, Scott.
I gave the match a star, and I gave Bundy's elbow drop 38 stars. I wish he had splashed him. I wish he had given him a splasher. And I think he should have lined up all four of them and just did one giant avalanche. I think that would have been the greatest moment in the history of the business. Your match time is 4:26. It's just a fun little dipsy-doo dunkaroo to keep the crowd kind of invigorated early on because we had much more serious stuff to deal with later in the show. And I really think that Vince wanted, realizing with the Dome in Pontiac, that he wanted the bigger matches when, and this is my personal opinion, I think he wanted the bigger matches when it got dark. So I think he tried to get a lot of the fluffy gunk out of the way. So that's why maybe some people think the early part of the show is leave a little bit to be desired. But I think that's because Vince wanted the big matches to be when it was dark.
Well, that's kind of the standard match construction too anyway at this point. I mean,
true. No,
you generally get like the first four matches on a WWF card at this point were pretty low end, and then you'd hit a big one around five or so. So I think we're trending. We're probably trending in the normal, structure.
Oh no, absolutely, I agree. I'm just saying that it's working out for him on this day because of the fact that it's not a normal dome and normal roof, and he's got and it wasn't even a great day. If you remember kind of the older pictures outside the Silver Dome, it was it was a chilly March day in suburban Detroit, so there was some snow on the ground, and I mean not as bad as you and I might remember, Johnny, Super Bowl 16, 6 years earlier or 5 years earlier when the Bengals played the Niners and it was like fucking 8 degrees in Pontiac. But it was still pretty cold that day. But anyway, I mean, the match is trash. It's all gimmicks and it's all goofing off, but it would have been great to see, Bundy just kill all the midgets. But it was fine. But I mean, seriously, though, you almost, again, Little Beaver's being a pain in the ass. He deserved to get elbowed. I mean, you know, if he elbowed, you know, Haiti Kid, he really would have got a heel heat because he's like the one midget everybody likes, so, and kind of knows. But, of course, you know, the classic line. I always say, I don't, it's kind of sad that I think of D'Amato when I hear it, but the classic Euchre line, oh, a lot of Beaver running around this place. But you got to love the Euchre. That's why I looked up today, guys. I was stunned when I said, oh, you know, because we all love Euchre. Euchre's awesome. God rest his soul. And I was looking at I wanted to look, because this is what made me look at our old list of manias on PlaceMeNation.com.
God rest his soul. Isn't he alive?
I think so.
No, he passed away.
Did he?
No, I thought he passed away.
Nah, he's still around.
Yeah. Burying the fucking guy.
No,
don't kill him yet, man. Don't kill him yet. He's still doing games.
Yeah, he's alive. He's 83, yeah.
Oh, really? Who was I thinking of that just passed away?
Yeah, he's still broadcasting for the Brewers.
Oh, I must have been thinking of somebody else. All right, anyway,
still
so you're not
those
dead.
Streaks on the China.
You put the mush on him.
Yeah, he's going to die tomorrow. Well, Rotella did that to Bastion Booger once, but anyway. sorry, Euchre. But anyway, what killed, well, his legacy at PlaceMeNation.com is killed because he wasn't even, he was in the also receiving votes for the top 10 non wrestling celebrities, or what the category of actors and musicians for, because technically he's an actor, obviously. He was in the also receiving votes. I thought he was at least in the top five, and he wasn't even close. But I was kind of bummed at that. But anyway, his commentating with Gorilla and Jesse here is hilarious. You like Lord Littlebrook, huh? He's a wily veteran. Great comment. The commentary made the match. That and, of course, Bundy crushing Little Beaver was a highlight for me. So I gave it a hat. I gave it one star, Johnny. Plenty of Beaver to go around.
Yeah, this was a perfect vehicle for Euchre. Later on, not so much. He gets a little annoying and out of place in some of the other matches. But here it was perfect when he says, oh, Beaver reminds me of a girl I went with 25 years ago with that haircut. You know, and he's telling everybody what kind of taste he had in women. I guess he liked chicks with mohawks or whatever. And Jesse says he hopes Bundy puts the big kibosh. Jesse was a sadist like Criscolo.
Yes, he was hoping for it the whole time.
A sadist. Gorilla called him a sadist. Didn't even, yeah. You're a sadist.
And then when all the midgets protected him, Gorillas goes, oh, even the other midgets didn't like what he did, man. So that was great, too. But like you said, Justin, it wasn't going to be like a work rate classic, so you might as well come up with it with a moment to last a lifetime, and that's what they pulled off here. It's all good.
There we go. Midgets live.
All right. So why don't we go ahead and move? Huh?
Oh, I was going to say I was considering this. Oh, are we going backstage now?
Oh, we are. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah. I was going to go to the next match, but I forgot we go backstage. That was it.
Okay. Mary Hart's back there chatting with Miss Elizabeth.
She's dead.
But before she can get a word out, Randy Savage comes in to handle all the questions and leaves as Mary's disappointed to not get her interview in. Gene then talks to Harley Race, Bobby Heenan, and for some reason, Fabulous Moolah, who's there to guard the crown just so she can coronate Harley after
the
his
queen.
Win.
Yeah,
the queen, all right. Gene chats with JYD. He'll be wearing the crown by the end of the match, he says. He wants to sit alone on the throne tonight.
And I got confused. I'm sorry, guys. I was getting confused with Larry King, who was sitting next to Mary Hart in this year's World Series, and we think he's dead. So that's, you know. We lifted him up and moved him around, but
this joke is dead, so we can move
on.
Okay. So here we go. Junkyard Dog taking on King Harley Race, and of course, if you remember back to our January 87 Saturday night's main event, during a match with the Dog, Race headbutted him, causing more injury to himself than his opponent. When he rolled out of the ring and talking to Bobby Heenan and JYD, put the crown and cape on of the king on, Heenan entered the ring and hit JYD from behind. Dog pushed him back. Race came in and hit JYD after the bell. Heenan and Race attempted to get the Dog to bow to the king, but instead he did everything he could to keep his head upright and not bow. And that leads to our match here tonight with the stipulation that the loser would indeed bow down to the winner. Feud been cooking for quite a while. Euchre leaves the booth to go find Moolah so he can bang her, I guess. That's pretty much what he says he wants to do.
Pretty much what he said.
Moolah shoehorned in here big time just to get her on the fucking card. The queen of wrestling, the keeper of the crown, whatever, the piece of shit that screws all the other women. Whatever she's supposed to be on this card is what she is. It's like we couldn't get through the show without her fucking mucking things up. JYD gets a big pop as he enters and things get underway. JYD blocks some punches and unloads, but Bobby trips him up. JYD hits the floor and chases Bobby, allowing Harley to catch him coming back in. JYD comes back with right hands and a headbutt that drops the King. They spill outside where Race whiffs on a falling headbutt and a gross bump. JYD clubs him back inside and sends him careening right back out. JYD slams Race back in and hooks an abdominal stretch and then lands a headbutt, but it backfires, and Jesse says he's crazy to try that to JYD, of course. JYD whips Race hard into the corner and flies up and over outside. JYD then pelts Race with headbutts as he comes back in and chases Bobby down off the apron. Race comes back in and gets a belly-to-belly for the win. Crowd was not happy at all with that one. Race sits in a chair and awaits JYD to bow, but Dog just curtsies instead and then drills Race with the chair. JYD puts on his robe and crown as Jesse's flipping out, and this is just heating up before the abrupt finish, I thought. Race's bumping was nuts as always, and they have some good brawling chemistry, but due to the setup here, I had to be quick, and they just didn't have enough time. But it was good enough for finale for this feud. You're probably not going to get much better, but again, just as things were starting to cook, we got the quick ending. So I went 1 star on this, John.
Yeah, me too. There's not much to this, and it's going to be a recurring thing, a theme on the evening. Even though the heel gets the win, they always got to make all the faces kind of at least look good. So they at least got to give JYD a little shine. Even though he really acted like a dick, I mean, he gets pinned clean, and then he hits him with the chair. And Harley and Bobby didn't really do anything heelish. They would just abide into the stipulations of the match. And JYD kind of hits him with the chair, so he gets at least some shine back.
Yeah, I mean, oh, sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, that's about it. That's about it.
Oh, okay. Your match time is only 3:23, which I thought was. I'm like, wow, this is really short, and then I realized why. JYD is a disaster right now. I mean, this is the tail end of the run. I mean, I hate it when he shaved his beard and kept just the mustache. He looked awful. And he just looked terrible. It's a shame for Harley because there's a guy who, one of the greatest of all time, and this is his only WrestleMania appearance, and at least he wins, but I mean, this match is a mess. I gave it a star and a half. I gave it a star and a half. I might be being a little generous, but 3:23 is short enough that it served its purpose. I was surprised that JYD lost. I'm not going to lie. I thought this was would have been a big moment for a nice babyface pop. And, if Harley could have, gotten it back, a month later or something. But so I have to admit, this was probably the first result I was kind of surprised on. I definitely thought that JYD was going to win here. But it's not a big deal. I'm a Harley guy, so I'm cool with it. Sadly, the match was dreadfully bad. The other Eucharism on this night was Boiler. Yeah. They got him right in the boiler. and he's feeling – he says something about, I'm sitting here. I'm feeling it in the boiler. I'm getting moolah. It was really good.
Like moolah.
Horny bastard. Oh,
so bad. But, this match isn't good. I don't understand why babyfaces need their heat back after they lose. I still don't understand why JYD even lost the match, but whatever. 3:23 your match time. And I think we've talked enough about this, except that it is very sad that here's a guy who 2 years ago, the JYD, probably 2.5 years ago, was the probably the number two babyface in the company after Hogan. And look how far he slid down now. It's kind of sad. It's very sad. And it doesn't get any better from here on out.
I'm going to debate that for 1 second because
– Sure.
I'd argue this is a top four match on this card, no?
Top four – in terms of build, in terms of importance, probably.
I think this is probably fourth from the top. I'd say you have the main event, you have the IC title match, Piper's retirement, and then I think this is, when you go by build and hype, I mean, maybe the Bulldogs, but I think this actually has had more build and focus. I think this, if you had to list out the matches in order of build and importance, I think this might be fourth.
Yeah, which makes it even more criminally strange that JYD lost.
I think they were setting up Harley for stuff coming up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
JYD can take the loss. And like John said, he's going to get his heat back anyway. Do you agree, John, as far as car position, that this is probably a top four match?
Maybe I'd put it maybe slightly behind Jake and Honky.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, all right. Maybe a little bit. It's probably about the same level of build.
It might be.
Top five, maybe. Yeah. It's still top five, six.
Yeah. So, he's in the upper edge of the cards. I don't think he's fallen yet. I mean, I think he will. But I think this is probably his last hurrah as far as a top guy. But I think at this point, he's still... Because even if you look back at that six-man we looked at last month, You know, he's in there with kind of the big guys for the big, you know, the Piper, Savage, and all those guys. So I think it's still, if you look at, if you go by that as far as important feuds, it was included in that six man. Right. So, yeah, no, I think he's still looked at as a guy. I mean, he's obviously deteriorating a bit in the ring and looks wise, but I don't think he's fallen off the cliff yet. Like, I don't think this is a big precipitous drop for him. It, honestly, you could say it's a bigger match than he had last year.
Definitely
the tag. Yeah.
I mean, and that you're talking about JYD six man and that tag match he had with the Funks was really good. So
right, but
yeah, because of the other guys I was in. Yeah.
Right, yeah, but as far as importance, I mean, on the card, like I would think this is bigger than that was. More. Yeah.
No, this was definitely more important. So, all right. Next up, we go back to the day, or do we go to a video package? I believe now, right?
No. Well, Vince is backstage with Hulk Hogan, who talks about his motorcycle ride through the mountains following a workout where fellow gym members told him this is his final ride. Hogan runs through more of that before telling Andre it's time for him to face the truth, and says tonight he will beat the Giant. Gene then chats with the Dream Team, Johnny V and Dino Bravo. V says the Dream Team will win tonight, and he blows off Gene's question about why Bravo needs to be involved here too. So there you go. Have we talked about Bravo yet? Did he pop up one of our last shows? I forget.
Let me take a look. I don't think he...
He didn't wrestle, but I feel like we saw him with... maybe not.
Was he in the Battle Royal?
Maybe. I don't know.
I feel like we saw him at... He was at a house. He was on an MSG house show at one point.
Yeah.
I think he was still with dark hair, though. I don't think he had...
Yeah, he fought Pedro in December. Okay. I thought we talked about him. All right. So anyway. Yes. So he's out here with the Dream Team, becoming one of Johnny V's boys and joining them out there as they take on the Rougeau brothers in another big event rematch. We're bringing all these matches back again. Yeah, none of it's referenced, but here we are. So the Rougeaus have been stalling a bit since the debut. They could really pick up a win here. They could need one. The Dream Team's on their last legs for sure a year after the big nightmare in Chicago, as Gorilla always reminds us. The Dream Team's joined by Dino Bravo, Johnny V's newest stable hand, but we aren't really told why he's there. Jesse puts over the Hammer's new robe, and Gorilla mentions the new uniforms for the Federettes, the ladies who take all the shit from the wrestlers coming out of the ring. Beefcake and Ray start things off and trade some basic arm holds to get us going. Ray lands on an atomic drop, and that's followed by a double dropkick, as Jesse says the refs are too lax on the double teams tonight. Hammer tags in, and he and Jacques try to trade some heavy blows, as Gorilla reminds us that Hammer gets tougher as the match goes on. Rougeau, I think this is one of the first times he said that. I feel like he hasn't really said it yet. I mean, it's gonna, obviously, we know it becomes a thing, but I don't know. Had you noticed it before yet, Scott, watching all this stuff? I feel like I hadn't heard it till today.
I'm not... Maybe?
Now, maybe he was saying it on TV or something, but we haven't heard him say it like on MSGs or anything yet, I don't think.
No.
All right, so the Rougeau's quick tag keep Hammer reeling, picking up some near falls. Gorilla talks about the Rosemont nightmare again as Jacques misses a dive off the middle rope and Hammer takes over and goes to work. Beefcake comes in and drops some hard knees for two, and the Dream Team now start double teaming as Bobby comes into the booth. Hammer locks in the figure four as Heenan says he's two for two on the night because Billy Jerk didn't beat Hercules and Race got the win and forced JYD to bow. Poor Bundy didn't even get mentioned until Gorilla brings it up, and Heenan says he wasn't out there for that, so it doesn't count, because he doesn't deal with or like midgets. Jacques survives the figure four and tags Ray, who comes in and starts to run through Hammer, locking in a sleeper. Beefcake tries to break the hold, but he accidentally hits Hammer, and a moment later, the Rougeaus hit Le Bombe. However, as the ref is tied up with Beefer, Bravo comes in and clobbers Ray, allowing Hammer to roll on top for the win. After the match, Bravo, Hammer, and Johnny V celebrate and head off on the cart, leaving Beefcake on his own in the ring. Fine enough, kept really quick to keep things moving. Both teams look good until the end when Beefcake is sacrificed for the greater good and Bravo gets all the shine. With Bravo in the fold, it looks like the original Dream Team may finally be dead. I want a star and a half in this, Scott. Talk about the match, and then we can talk about the Dream Team's run if you want.
I give the match 2 stars. Your runtime is 4:02. So another tag match that probably could have been really good with another like 9 minutes. So there's really not much to say here. It's a back and forth. The Rougeaus pretty much got sacrificed for the sake of the storyline, obviously. Mm. The Dream Team's run was great until, April 7th, 1986 at Rosemont. And then according to Gorilla, they all should have killed themselves.
It basically says for a year after that, they haven't recovered the nightmare on the Rosemont horizon at all. Yeah. He's still talking about it.
It's ridiculous. I was a big Dream Team fan. I remember my brother loving them when we were kids. And it pretty much got Brutus Beefcake to this point. So a lot of props to the Hammer, and to Bobby, to Luscious John, for that matter, because kind of taught him psychology, taught him, you know, helped him get storytelling down. And if there was anybody that benefited the most, obviously with the Hammer, it was Brutai. Mm-hmm. But a great tag run. We saw some great matches at the Garden. We saw some great matches on Saturday's Main Event. Obviously the WrestleMania 2 match is probably the best tag team match in WrestleMania history to the short point, but there was a great run. But it was time for one of the two to move on. Obviously they felt Beefcake was ready for his moment, and the Hammer, you know, didn't really need him anymore. I wasn't thrilled with Bravo. I wasn't a big fan of him when he was a babyface. I really didn't care about him here. His ring jacket was nice, big sparkly Canadian flag. But other than that, nothing here for me. Good moment for Beefer and his kind of half mullet. It's kind of growing out a little bit. It looked a little weird. I feel bad for the Rougeaus, but you needed somebody to kind of, you know, eat the pin here. And 402 is nothing ridiculous. So we're hustling along here with these early matches, John. But other than the Beefcake thing, not much here. What did you think of the Dream Team, too?
Oh, I love the Dream Team, but this match, it seemed like it was a whole it was the whole deal to get Bravo over. Like even in a pre-match interview, only Johnny V and Bravo speaking. He's not even wrestling. You know, they say, oh, you know, Bravo gives the Sacre Bleu, where is me mama, or whatever he said before, you know, speaking in French. And but one thing that stood out is Jesse was incredible getting the Beefcake turnover. He was like, oh, what's Beefcake doing, that idiot? And then Gorilla was like, oh, they're leaving him in the ring. And then Jesse's really hammering Brutus. So that came out of nowhere. I mean, we saw foreshadowing with Brutus on some of the syndicated matches. There was a little incident with the person that's in the next match. But Jesse really hammered home the turn, the Beefcake turn there, and that was the most impressive part of this. About the Rougeaus didn't get much chance to do much, and they just had to eat the pin to kind of put over Bravo and also to put over the Beefcake turn.
What a fall! Like, what a downgrade for the fucking Dream Team to go from what they had. And Beefcake in a vacuum is nothing special, but the chemistry they've built and put together in becoming a really good team, and then to take that and just go to Dino Bravo, like, that's such a fucking downgrade. But I mean, they clearly saw breakout potential in Beefcake. They obviously thought he could be a face, and we'll see that continue in a little bit. But they saw something in him to decide to pull the trigger now and break them apart. And I don't blame them. I mean, the Dream Team had pretty much done all they could do at this point. I mean, how much more can they really accomplish? They've exhausted all the tag team title matches. The division's kind of moved on. If anything, I was actually surprised that they wanted to keep Valentine on the team and not break him out as singles guy again. In a way, he was probably a little disappointed that Beefcake gets to go on his own, and now he's going to be stuck lugging around Dino Bravo going forward. But I think it was a smooth time to break the Dream Team up, and may as well pull the trigger on Beefcake. I mean, he's probably peaked as far as improvement goes working with Valentine. He's come a long way. Why not see if it'll pay off?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And it's kind of a bummer for the Hammer because, you know, I love seeing the Hammer even in singles. But I guess this is kind of a natural progression. We'll see how much use Dino Bravo is in the general scheme of things.
But. And at first, I thought it was kind of weird that they had the Rougeaus lose when they were breaking up the team. But, I mean, I guess it puts over Bravo is better. I don't know, or it's being, you know, the shrewd part of the team that he ends up getting them the win from outside.
Right.
I guess that was the idea, but I felt like it was kind of real pissing on the Rougeaus. Like, they used them for a complete prop to get over Dino Bravo basically throughout this whole match.
Yeah, pretty much.
I thought they deserved a bit better, but I guess if you look at the tag ranks, I mean, that's just kind of where they're at this point.
Yeah.
And also, if you look at the card a whole, a couple of the faces gotta eat the pin.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Most of the night is you know, the faces get over pretty much, so a couple guys got to be sacrificed.
No, in this instance, like I said, the Rougeaus, they've got plenty of opportunities down the line. It was an easy opportunity for them to just eat this pin and give the, you know, the storyline a chance to breathe. So 4 minutes and 2 seconds, a win for the Dream Team. However, obviously restructured
Beefcake's left out of the club. Yeah.
Yep, lingering.
So it's so sad when he's standing there watching them ride off in the cart.
They look like a poor fucking schlub. Yeah.
They just walk off. They don't give a fuck that he's still there. They don't even look at him. All right, backstage, Gene is with Adrian Adonis and Jimmy Hart. They joke about Roddy Piper's upcoming shitty haircut he's about to get tonight and sure to come with that loss. And then we head to the ring for our first of our big three matches on the evening, and that is Roddy Piper versus adorable Adrian Adonis in the retirement haircut match. Of course, only Piper is the one retiring, but the haircut stipulation applies to both men, and the time has finally come. The feud's been raging for quite a while, encapsulated Piper's face turn along the way. Not only a grudge match, but also the haircut match, like we mentioned. Win or lose for Piper, this is it. The boos immediately start pouring down as Adonis and Hart motor to the ring, hedge clippers and mirror in tow. Piper gets a huge ovation as he runs down the aisle, bagpipes blaring throughout the arena. A massive dome buzzing as Piper disrobes and we get underway. Jesse says we'll either have a bald Scott or Humpty Dumpty after the match. Piper's all over Adonis, whipping him with his belt, choking Hart with it. Adonis drills Piper from behind and uses the belt to lay in some tight shots. Piper withstands those and drags Hart and rams their heads together and sends them both flying over the top, and the crowd's just going ballistic. Adonis returns, but Piper's all over him. Jimmy heads up top, but Piper chucks him into Adonis. As Adonis is arguing with the ref, Hart trips up Piper and allows Adrian to get to work. Adrian lays in some strong clotheslines and keeps pounding on Hot Rod. Piper ends up outside, where Jimmy lands a shot as well. Adonis keeps bringing the heavy blows, but Piper won't back down, leaving it all in the field tonight. Adonis eventually hooks in Goodnight Irene and keeps it held on tight as Roddy squirms around and rolls on the mat. Adonis releases the hold after the arm drops twice and starts to celebrate with Jimmy. That allows Beefcake to show up and wake up Piper, who pops up and levels Adonis from behind. Adonis tries to hit Piper with the clippers but dodges it, and they bounce off the ropes and hit Adonis in the face. Piper then hooks a sleeper to a monster pop, and that's all she wrote as Adonis goes to sleep. After the match, Piper pins down Hart as Brutus Beefcake shaves Adonis bald. Adonis comes to and sees himself in the mirror, which he punches and then fails in trying to run down Piper before skulking away bald. Piper gets his final moment in the sun with the fans in the ring and then again on the cart. A really fun match, nuclear heat throughout. The finish was kind of blah. I didn't think they needed Adonis to release the hold. It's like, I know maybe they're kind of like, secretly just trying to give it, not secretly, I guess, subconsciously trying to give Adonis a little bit of rub since he's in theory staying around and not leaving. But I thought, given the night and the emotion, everything else going on, like, we didn't really need a visual win by Adonis over Piper. I just didn't think it was necessary. Beefcake being involved is weird too. Like, I know they're trying to give him the rub and get him over, and I know they had set it up, which we didn't talk about. I guess we can cover it in a second as well, or right now. It was like the week before the show, they had a six-man with the Dream Team and Adrian Adonis, and Adonis accidentally cut Beefcake's hair. So Beefcake is getting his revenge here, but that felt kind of forced as well. I know they're trying to give him the rub to transition the feud, but it just felt like this was Piper's moment, and you already have him get a visual loss, and you have Beefcake get involved. And again, I just didn't think any of it was needed. Piper has had a hell of a run and a tremendous final feud for him. Lots of twists and turns and memorable moments. Crowd gives him a very fitting send-off here, too. Great moment, good match. I went 3 stars, John.
Yeah, me too. I mean, for the love that Mr. Criscolo has for Triple H, at this time, my love was deeper and harder for Hot Rod at this time, and it was bittersweet because at the time you really didn't think that it was one of those fake retirements. You thought it was legit that this would really be the last time that we'd see him, and it helped. It was real special that he chose not to ride that cart, that entrance where mm-hmm. where he walked and then did a little jog to the ring, and the crowd just went ballistic. I mean, that was just a perfect entrance. And then and Adrian and Jimmy got to get kudos because they were just bumping all over the place.
Oh yeah,
Jimmy Hart was a superstar in this match. He made Roddy look like $1 million just bumping all over the place. And Adrian too, his tits were flopping all over the place. He was it was beautiful. And then to hop on the with Brutus, it was a shame because like a week later, Adrian's gone. He either quit or got fired. So the feud with Brutus never went down. I mean, there was perfect how they set up the next feud. Brutus had just turned, and there, it was what looked like a hot feud between Brutus and Adrian would have been great. And not to shrug you a little bit, but the Clippers were kind of malfunctioning, so Adrian didn't really get bald. Actually, Brutus hardly cut any of his hair. So
right.
That it was a little. And then after Adrian had cut it all off, and there was like, you know, 1 week of syndication shows where Adrian showed up with the bald head and looked real funny. But then, like I said, after that, he was either released or got fired, so we never got to see much after that. But yeah, the Clippers malfunctioned, so they hardly cut any hair. And also, did you notice that when Roddy was celebrating, a fan snuck into the ring and came from behind, and Roddy's like, yeah, Roddy shook his hand, and then Roddy stepped down, you know, he stepped out of the ring, and Blackjack and Patterson were congratulating him, and then you saw in the background the fan was getting the shit kicked out of the ring.
Yeah.
Security finally caught up to him. I thought that was great too. Like he stunned Roddy, the fan came from behind, actually, like, you know, smacked him in the back, and then Roddy just turned around and then just shook his hand. But it's like that was a little I'm surprised, like even on the network, they didn't really scrub that. I guess they couldn't, because it would kind of block you know, Roddy's shine. But so, everything was beautiful.
So I'll give your thoughts on the match, and then we'll this is it for Adrian, so we'll talk about the kind of next year of his life after that.
Mm. Piper's entrance, and it confirmed it again for me today, and I've seen this show a zillion times. Is the first real great moment for me as a fan watching. Just thinking 2 years earlier, I mean 1 year earlier, but definitely 2 years earlier, how much everybody fucking hated this guy. And what a difference 2 years makes.
The whole match, Scott. The pops through the whole match. Mm-hmm. Like when he got the sleeper on everything.
Yeah, it never stops, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, out of control. The match, your match length, by the way, 6:55. It was really good. I gave it 3 stars. I liked it. You had two memorable guys, two legendary dancers who could dance with anybody, and no issues. You know, needing to deal with. I mean, the psychology was there. You had two guys who knew what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first match that needed to get over that really heightened the elevation of drama and excitement for this show. As we said earlier, we were trying to talk about, like, this is obviously the number 3 of the big feuds. Also because, I mean, the Pit was such an important show for these last 8 weeks because, there was no other really interview show. So the Pits were huge for putting over this show, not just this feud. And I definitely thought the beefcake thing was overkill. I think Piper could handle this by himself, obviously. I liked him.
Well,
even if
they just had him come out like after the match to cut the hair, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because, you know, his hair, I just didn't think we needed him helping Piper recover. Like it just felt like too much. Like we've come this fucking far. There's like a minute and a half left in this guy's career. Can we just let him win? Like, we really need all the parlor tricks. Do we need the pickup at the sleeper? And do we need Beefcake coming out and helping him? It is like they've had, right. Piper and Beefcake had no interaction at all. It's like it just made no sense. It was so confusing. I just didn't think it was needed. I mean, like, no. I said,
yeah, yeah, he had just turned. Beefcake kind of just technically turned like 5 minutes ago in the match before. So,
and at least this way, like, yeah, by having him come out and, like, wake up and help Piper, that doesn't make sense, too, like you're saying, John, because he just turned. At least if he just comes out after the match and cuts the hair, you can say, well, he's doing it for revenge on Adrian. That's it. Purely revenge. Yeah. He's not, like, all of a sudden he's friends with Roddy Piper because he's a, you know, we got turned on. It's like it just would have been better if he just came out after. And by the way, I hate the fucking, I've talked about this, I think, probably the last time we talked about
this
show.
Yeah,
the scissors drives me nuts. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's so fake. Just like,
it's cartoonish. Yeah. It's cartoonish.
Because he doesn't do it in one motion. He snaps off the rope and, like, looks at them and then hits himself in the head with it. It's just, it's really awful.
Yeah. But when you're talking about greatest WWE wrestlers of all time, hint, hint. In fact, I was listening yesterday to an episode of an exceptional compendium show to our project called Making the Cut. I don't remember who was on it, though. Anyway, they were talking about Roddy Piper. And this match, this whole segment, from the minute he comes down until the minute he leaves, is the reason why he's a top 20 all-time guy. Maybe top 15, depending on your thinking or fandom. But at least top 20 all-time WWE guy.
But also
for just this match. This match alone is enough evidence. I mean, there's more evidence, of course, but this alone tells you why he is.
But because, looking back, it's also a little sad because this is the mountaintop,
mm-hmm.
and, yep. and after he comes back, he definitely takes a couple steps down.
Do you think he would have stayed
this hot if he stuck around?
Yes.
Or do you think this was the peak, regardless?
I think he'd have been hot. I think it would have gone for. Well, here's the thing.
Like, what does he do after this? You know,
feud with. No, he's a babyface. I don't know. Get a tag team partner, feud with the Hart Foundation? I don't know.
Right, yeah. I mean, you kind of look at the card and you're like, where does he...
Not a tag. Maybe,
it was good from the leaf. It was good from
maybe,
the leaf.
Yeah, maybe like Savage or somebody. And then, but eventually, if he sticks around, he would have stayed hot and then eventually turn on Hulk in a year or two. And,
yeah, probably.
If they want him to do that, you know? I don't know if that would have flown, depending on how they're... I mean, obviously, and we won't tip our hand on this, but obviously this roster... evolves over the next couple of years. So Piper kind of gets lost in the shuffle, to be honest. So I don't know. I'm not sure. I think him just leaving was probably the smart thing to do. He was probably smart to leave. His spot is secure, but he knew he probably wasn't going to be an everyday worker. So he was probably better off just leaving and going off and doing, you know, Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Well, They Live was a legit movie. I mean,
No, I'm just saying he was better off doing that than staying. Yeah.
Right.
I think he does Hell Comes to Frogtown first, though, because They Live doesn't come out till 89.
Right.
So I think he did Hell Comes to Frogtown first. Anyway, in answer to your question, JR, I think he was just better off leaving. Because I think the roster evolves, and I don't want to say he gets lost in the shuffle. That's fucking Piper. Piper never gets lost in the shuffle. But he does and he doesn't. I mean, is there anybody in the roster he could feud with?
I suppose. I mean, there's guys. There's nothing that jumps out. And
right.
You know, yeah, I think it was this time for him to go because, A, who's he going to feud with or what's he going to do? But, B, it's probably not going to get better, you know? This is it. He's going out on top. You know, what else is he going to do that he hasn't done? And it may have started to feel like he was just kind of hanging around. Now, I don't think his pops weren't going to die. I mean, everyone loved him. He would have still been a hot draw, but you kind of wonder, all right, you know, where does he fill in? Where's he slotted in that's going to feel as hot and as big as this? And at this point, there really wasn't anything. Maybe you could say like a guy like Honky eventually, but, I mean, he had other shit brewing. So it's kind of, I mean, as a face, it just really wasn't a great spot for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Savage is busy, and then he turns too. You know, it's kind of like where does he go? You know, if you just think of what the card looks like by the end of the year. I mean, maybe you got other guys coming in like a Rude or something. I don't know. You know, like maybe something like that. But
Yeah, the roster evolves to the point where he almost feels like he's lost. He's kind of floating around. I mean, look what happens. Obviously, when he comes back, but we'll get there anyway. But anyway, like I said, this my last thing to reiterate. When we talk about, and obviously we're promoting it heavily between now and the end of the year, when you're thinking about all of you listening out there, when you're thinking about making your top 100 GWWE list and you're wondering where he belongs, just watch this match from when he walks in to when he walks out, and it'll give you a perfect example of where he belongs on the list and in everyone's eyes separately. To me, he's a top 20 and always has been. Some people put him 15, top 10, some even top 5. But this match from beginning to end is the perfect example of why he is as great as he is and was. So,
all right, let's quick.
And the first remote.
Let's quickly talk about Adrian Adonis. So this is it for him. We're not going to see him again. So he's supposed to obviously start a feud with Brutus Beefcake. I don't think that's any surprise. Fired in May of 1987. The reason that's out there is it have claimed it was dress code violations.
Oh, come on.
Does that even make sense?
I just picture him coming up, like, showing up in a dress. Why are you wearing that? You told me to. But I'm guessing that's more drug code violations, is what it was, just knowing Adrian's issues. So he went to the AWA with his bald head, managed by Paulie Dangerously in 1987 with with the adorable gimmick, feuded with Tommy Rich, who lost the final match of the AWA International TV Tournament, title tournament to Greg Gagne in December. Hurt his ankle, that recovers, ends up going for a tour of New Japan in May and June of 1988, teamed up with Dick Murdoch, Owen Hart, and DJ Peterson. June 23rd, he and Murdoch failed to win the tag team titles from Riki Choshu and Masa Saito, the IWGP tag titles. And then on July 4th, 1988, in Newfoundland, Adrian Adonis, Keith Frank, was in a minivan with fellow wrestlers William Arco, known as Mike Kelly, Victor Arco, known as Pat Kelly, I don't know why they're not just the Arcos, and Dave Wildman McKigney. Frank McKigney and Victor Arco were killed when the driver, William Arco, allegedly swerved to avoid hitting a moose, and blinded by the setting sun, their van fell from a bridge to a creek below. Frank suffered severe head injuries and died a few hours later. William Arco was the sole survivor, sustaining severe leg injuries, left behind a wife and two daughters when he passed away. So, sad ending for Adrian, a guy that, you know, I don't know what if he ever would have popped up again. I mean, he probably would. Everyone did. So he probably would have showed up at some point, probably in the early 90s, back with the WWF. So a sad end to him, and maybe a little morbid, but I couldn't help but think, watching WrestleMania 3, and when he punches the mirror, the 7 years of bad luck, when he breaks the mirror with his fist, you know, like maybe that played a role in some
cosmic way. Did he actually break it, though?
I think he does, right? Doesn't he? I mean, he punches the mirror or something. At least probably cracked it, no? Did you
maybe
notice, John? Did he crack it?
I didn't notice.
Yeah. But anyway.
I don't know if he broke it or not.
I know for some cosmic, you know, 7 years of bad luck thing. But anyway, that's my thoughts. What do you any thoughts on you guys on Adonis' end of his life here?
Oh, just a screwed beef to get out of a good feud.
All right, well, him leaving did. I meant more his death. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy. I don't want to say silly way to die. I shouldn't say that. But it's kind of unfortunate. Something as simple as guy get blinded by the sun. Yeah. Blinded by the light. But I'm going to miss Adonis. He was a great heel. Great worker. Underrated worker. I have him rated pretty high for him on my list. You know, he took a gimmick that was pretty much a punishment for being fat and rolled with it. You know what I mean? I mean, he could have dogged it, but he didn't. He made the best out of a bad situation for himself, for his career. So, good for him. And it got him a good spot on the biggest show of the year. I'm sure his paycheck was pretty hefty. So, I applaud that. I feel bad Gorilla was like needling Jesse that this guy used to be his tag team partner. It's kind of sad because he's still a good wrestler. It's, right. You know, but it was a shame. It was a shame the way it ended, but
yeah.
A great moment. He got a great moment out of this. So, always memorable.
All right. So, that's pretty much the nominal end of the first half of the show. We're going to edge in a little bit more before our break here. Mm-hmm. As Gorilla Monsoon is with Mary Hart and Bob Uecker, they wonder where Jesse is, and we find out very soon. As Gorilla says he demanded to be introduced in the ring, where we then head, and Fink does exactly that. Jesse hops in the ring and draws with Fink, shakes hands with the Hart Foundation, and then heads out. That's pretty funny, though. Like, goes all the way down there just to get introduced. Like, I mean, how long did it take him to get down? But I wonder if part of it was Jesse was just like, I want to go see what it's like down there, looking out at the crowd and everything. That's probably part of it. I'm sure deep down he still wondered, like, if he hadn't gotten sick, if he would have been on that card or something. So I'm sure that was part of it. Just wanted to go out there.
Don't forget, he was a big deal at the time with the movies. I think this was in between Predator and Running Man. So they definitely wanted to get him in front of the crowd and give him a pop for the crowd.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right. No, agreed. All right. So Gorilla then throws it to Gene, who talks to the Hart Foundation. Jimmy says the Harts are the greatest in the world, and they're going to unleash Danny Davis here tonight. Says the Bulldogs are crybabies, and they have a war on their hands. And that does bring us to our next match, a big six-man tag, as the Hart Foundation and Danny Davis take on the British Bulldogs and Tito Santana. We've covered a lot of the build so far. Of course, the Hart Foundation screwed the Bulldogs for the tag titles back in January. Danny Davis was part of that. He now went full-blown heel. Jack Tunney stripped him of his refereeing duties, and he became an active wrestler. Basically the third man now in the Hart Foundation, without really saying it. And then Tito Santana, of course, is part of this match on the British Bulldog side because he was screwed by Danny Davis in Retcon World against Randy Savage back in February '86.
Big six-man tag here as the new champs are flying high. Danny Davis ready for his in-ring pay-per-view debut. The Bulldogs and Tito have both been burned by Davis and are dying for revenge. Mary's very into Matilda because her and Bob Uecker, of course, stay here in commentary as Jesse's still making his way back up to the booth. They hit the ring, and the pup chases everyone from the ring. Tito and Brett start things off, and Chico unloads with the right hands and spikes the hitman to the mat. Jesse carries off Matilda, which was kind of weird, as Davey and Anvil both tag in. They trade some power offense until Dynamite comes in, and the Bulldogs lay in a double headbutt. Tito quickly tags, but gets trapped in the corner and choked. Anvil slugs away, but Tito leapfrogs him and tags in Davey, who comes in hot with the right hands and a backdrop. Anvil pops up and decks Davey with a sledge blow and then tags Brett, but he misses an elbow off the middle rope. Dynamite comes in and spikes Brett down before shooting him hard to the corner. Dynamite follows with a stiff clothesline as Uecker wonders when we'll see Danny again or get in the ring. Anvil interferes and turns the tide, followed by Brett going to work in the corner. Anvil tags in and goes to the chin lock and tags in Brett, who hits an elbow to the throat off the middle rope. Davis tags in for the first time, and Mary asks, how can Dynamite escape this? Davis kicks Dynamite and tags right back out, so a great chorus of boos. Brett and Anvil take turns keeping on the pressure, trapping Dynamite in their side of the ring. Davis comes in and tries for a splash, but Dynamite gets the knees up and tags Tito, who comes in and mauls Danny, chucking him all around the ring. As Uecker said, he's waited a year for this. Tito's flying around the ring like crazy, drilling Danny with flying forearm and then just punching him in the face over and over. Anvil cuts off the figure four attempt, but Tito tags Davey, who catches Danny and levels him with a clothesline and runs him into Dynamite's head. Davey follows with a nasty inverted pile driver and follows that with a vertical suplex. Davis is just a puddle of jello as Davey crushes him with a running power slam, but Anvil breaks up the pin. Things break down here, but Davis is able to pelt Davey with the megaphone and cover for the sneaky win, and the crowd did not like that one, but I thought it was shrewd. My only issue was that Davis was alive at the end. Like, I thought after all that brutal offense, Davis should just be dead, and they should have had, like, Brett come in and hit him with the megaphone and just drag Davis on top. Like, the fact that Danny was able to get up, get the megaphone, and hit Davey was just a bit too much for me. Like, he just took a shit-kicking, and that was the cathartic part of the match, right, was Davis. Even though the Hearts are going to win, Davis finally gets all of this offense, you know, get the shit-kicked out of him for punishment. Just a minor quibble there. But the match was good. The crowd was really into it. Tito was awesome on the hot tag. He just came in and beat the shit out of everyone. I love watching Davey just destroy Davis, too. A great taste of revenge, even with the loss. I thought this was well-booked and well-executed. I went 3 stars on this, Scott.
I went 3 stars on it as well. Your total runtime, 8:52 for this one. This is a great match. Obviously, Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation are what they are. Tito's Tito. And I agree with you. I mean, Danny Davis got fucking pummeled.
Oh, God. He gets murdered.
He should not have been able to do anything here. I agree with you. I think Brett should have clocked Bulldog, and they should have just threw his limp carcass right on top of him and got the cheap win. But, I mean, you could argue Danny Davis is like the third or fourth hottest heel in the company at this point. But it was a really good, well-worked match. This is the first match where the sun is down. The building's relatively dark now. So now you're really getting the real scope of the event now, this 90-something thousand, and now the building's dark. So now there's a special feel to the ring now because it's just the ring lights. Brett and Anvil have definitely shaken off – I know you talked about it often, JR, at the tail end of 86 as we headed into 87 about the kind of the malaise that the pink and black had throughout 86. They've definitely shaken it off. They're the best team in the company. The Bulldogs definitely look like they've lost a step. I feel like they're a little slower still getting there. I mean, they had their foot on the pedal throughout 86 when they were the tag champs, working through injuries and such. And you could see that it definitely, obviously, with Dynamite, they're slowly starting to break down a little bit, or he is anyway. And Tito's Tito. I thought he was going to eat the pin, but Davey Boy did instead. I thought it was a great match. Great heat for Danny Davis. I don't know what they were needing to give him that much heat for. But I agree with you. I think the minor quibble is he should have just gotten like plopped on top of somebody, and somebody else should have handled the actual
shot. Right, just drag him on top.
Shot.
I mean, it just looks silly that he got destroyed and then is up. I mean, he sells it well enough that he like collapses after, and they have to carry him off.
Right.
But even that was just too much. Like, just let him get dragged on top. He didn't need to be the one getting up, catching the megaphone, hitting him, and after just all the. I mean, he should have been literally like unconscious after everything that happened to him.
Excuse me. Yeah, I agree. No, it was a bit much. But 3 stars, fantastic match, John, and a big win for the heels.
Yeah, I agree with you how at this point Davis was one of the hottest heels, and I love how they built it up of him getting his ass kicked. This bloodthirsty crowd, like he would go in and throw a little kick and then tag right out, and they built up to that moment where he finally slipped and they caught him, and they just took turns beating the crap out of him. And one time Davey Boy backdropped him, he almost hit his head on the Silverdome roof. It was so high. I mean that's pretty much what Davis was best for. He took good bumps, and I don't know what else they saw or they were going to get out of him, but he was great at taking bumps, and the crowd just ate it up. And the only quibble with this match was Gorilla was a little distracted. You could tell he missed Jesse there because he was trying to keep Mary and Uke on track there, and Gorilla even missed the big turning point of the match when Davis hit him with the megaphone. Gorilla didn't really catch it to the replay. And another thing, Tito is a shitty tag partner. He hasn't learned his lesson from WrestleMania 2. The same thing. His hot Latin temper distracted the ref. And
that Latin blood is flowing hot.
Yeah, the ref turns his back and his partner gets cracked with the megaphone. That's exactly what happened to JYD in WrestleMania 2. So Tito still hasn't learned his lesson. He's kind of like...
He's a tag mush.
Yeah. It's kind of like Montez Burkett out there.
Perfect.
Penalties.
Perfect, Francesa. Perfect.
Burfucked. Burfucked. Yeah.
Do you guys think that we would have been better off with a tag title match here? Or are you happy with what we got? Like, do you think this is hotter than the tag title because Tito and Davis being involved?
No, I think this is hot because the crowd, more than a tag team match, they were dying to see Davis get his ass kicked. That was the build. I think it was perfect.
Plus Dynamite's hurting, too. You can't really... You got to keep him protected a bit, so.
Yeah, and Danny Davis is really the heat of this match, almost even more than the two teams alone, because it was Danny Davis that caused the title change, so the title switch. So there was no doubt that he needed to be. Yeah. It needed to be like this.
I was thinking they could have maybe done like a tag title match with Tito and Davis, like handcuffed at ringside or something. They beat him up after, if you really wanted to. But Davis, maybe. The payoff of Davis finally wrestling and getting the shit kicked out of him was the because they even do the great. Heat building tease in the middle where he tags in for like a second and then tags back out. Like that was really good.
Yeah. So, all right, great match. 3 stars for me and 8:52 your time. Why don't we? Because we got a lot left to do. Why don't we take a break? So far, JR, pretty awesome, pretty solid.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been a good show.
Yep. Johnny, I know yours. My opinion never changes.
Yeah, so. Slow start, but it's starting to pick up.
Yes.
Yep. Nope, absolutely. So when we come back, we have, what do we got? One.
Five.
We have one, two, yep. 5 matches left, including our 2 championship matches, the 2 big ones, and more to come. But first, words, because?
Because!
Because.
This morning, I woke up with this feeling I didn't know how to deal with. And so I just decided to myself, I'd hide it to myself. And never talk about it. And didn't I go and shout it when you walked into the room? I think I love you.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on 3 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett, the founder and president of Global Force Wrestling, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we're back looking at WrestleMania 3. Myself, Scott, Johnny, we are making our way through the show. And Scott, you mentioned that we played football yesterday. It was a really fun game, kind of a blowout. You were on the losing team, but that's not neither here nor there. It was still good to get out there and have a blast. And I saw you kind of, you know, limping off the field. There was a couple times you got laid out, you were hurting, and I said, come here, big guy, you lean on me as we walk off the field. I'll carry you off of there. Make sure yes. You get home okay. Make you that salami sandwich before you hit the road. And of course, there's only one piece of salami, but who's counting? But, you know, here we are.
Was it a Helen Hart sandwich?
Thank you. Picked up on it. So anyway, there you went onto the road. But hopefully you're feeling better now today. And of course, that is the song playing underneath us tonight. That is Lean On Me. And that will bring us into Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And yes, it was tough when a 260-pounder, however Machado's brother weighs or whatever, 260-pound guy lands on your ribs. Yeah, it smarted a little. Anyway, you're listening to Club Nouveau, which was the number one song in the country in the newest Billboard Top 100, which came out the day before, March 28th, 1987. So congrats to Club Nouveau. At number two, moving up a couple spots, Starship with Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now from the movie Mannequin. Number three, our girl Janet with Let's Wait a While. At number four, Genesis with one of my favorite songs from them, Tonight, 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 which is where we are, Pontiac, Tonight. Number five, dropping down a spot, Mandolin Rain by Bruce Hornsby and the Range. Number six, from that Disney movie, An American Tale, is Somewhere Out There, Linda Ronstadt and James Ingram. Number seven, Come Go With Me by Exposé, another one of our favorite late 80s R&B soul bands. Number eight, The Final Countdown by Europe. Number nine, Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House. I'm sure, John, you saw Crowded House at some point in your life and maybe don't remember.
And Crowded House 10, here the other night, down in the basement, you slobs all sleeping down there.
That's for sure. Well, one's been a little earlier than the other. He broke out of his cocoon, flew away before the sun came up. And at number 10, speaking of our girl, Miss Aretha Franklin, she was at number 10 with George Michael from Wham, singing, knew you were waiting for me. So it's a pretty good duet. Anyway, there's your top 10. And at number 1, as mentioned, was Lean On Me by Club Nouveau. We be jamming. So there you go. All right, let's go to the big screen, JR. Good night to have not many movies come out that Friday the 27th, since we do a very long show tonight. But we do have one movie that came out of consequence. Made a decent amount of money, $39.3 million. A comedy, I believe I remember this, and Johnny, you probably remember it too. A comedy entitled Blind Date.
Oh, of course, Bruce Willis.
Yeah, I believe so.
Kim Basinger, yeah, definitely.
There we go.
John Larroquette.
Remember that show? That show was the best.
Oh, of course, yes. Blind Date.
That was a Cindy legend. That film, right?
Yes.
There.
Yes.
I got a lot on DVD. Yes. Blind Date.
Lodge, right with me, the host. Yep.
That was one of the original. I feel like that was one of the earliest pop up stuff. I guess pop up was pop up video. That was before that, right? When was Blind Date? Early 2000s.
No, around the same time as pop up video, right?
Was it? Yeah.
What they were thinking. That was great. I love Blind Date.
Yeah, the little balloons. Walter Davis allows his brother Ted to set him up on a blind date with his wife's cousin Nadia. Nadia is shy and to experience some awkwardness. As the evening goes on, though, Nadia begins to drink and behave in a wild manner. A warning about her behavior under the influence of alcohol had been given by Ted's wife, but when Ted relayed the warning to Walter, he made it sound like a joke and said it may be a benefit. To make matters worse, Nadia's jealous ex-boyfriend David shows up and exacerbates the situation by stalking the couple all night, assaulting and attempting to assault Walter several times, even ramming Walter's car with his own. Starring Bruce Willis, Kim Basinger, John Larroquette, William Daniels, George Coe, Phil Hartman, Stanley Jordan, Barry Sobel, Brian George, Sab Shimono, Kim Basinger, did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. That's it. That's who's in it.
There you go. All right. So there's your one movie. All right. A big sports weekend this weekend in March. Of course, the baseball season. We know who the defending champs are, Mr. D'Amato. And we'll get more into baseball on our next show. But it was Final Four weekend, probably a few hundred miles south in Nolens at the Superdome, the 1987 NCAA Final Four. Your Final Four teams were Syracuse Orangemen, back then when they were Orange Men, the Indiana Hoosiers, the UNLV Runner Rebels, and yes, Place to Be Nation's own Providence Friars making their second ever trip to the Final Four, Mr. Rosero.
Saints are marching in.
Ricky Pinastino.
That's right. Delray Brooks, Billy D. Let's see what PC did in their run. Let's see. Here we go. They were the sixth seed going in. They beat UAB 90-68. Second round, they beat Austin Peay in overtime 90-87. Austin Peay had upset the three seed Illinois. Then they blew out number two seed Alabama 103-82 in the regional semis. And then, yes, the regional final at the Meadowlands in East Rutherford. Yes, they did defeat the number one seeded Hoyas of Georgetown 88-73 in what would be Reggie Williams' final game as a Hoya.
Austin Peay.
Billy Donovan had 20 points in the win over Georgetown. So those four teams went to the Superdome in New Orleans. In the first game, Indiana defeated UNLV in a shootout, 97-93. These games were the day before our show here. Steve Alford had 33 for Indiana. And Freddie Banks had 38. Armand Gilliam.
Stripped out by Bob Knight.
Yes, and then Armand Gilliam at 10. And then sadly, in the second game, my beloved Mr. Rosero, the Friars' miracle run would come to an end. Syracuse gets the win, 77-63. Greg Monroe had 20. Derek Coleman had 12 rebounds. Carlton Screen, who I actually met, very nice guy. Carlton Screen had 18 points, the high for the Friars.
Guess.
And some guy named Duda had 7 rebounds.
Lucas.
I would have said that. And Billy Donovan had 7 assists. So, and the national championship the following night from here, March 30th. Of course, I might as well just say it. We all know what happened. Derek Coleman could have clinched the game. with two free throws, bricked both, and then Keith Smart with a big jumper from the wing. Indiana wins the national championship 74-73. So there you go. Congrats to the Hoosiers and a great run for Mr. Penistino and
his
Friars.
Peepees.
That's right. And the Friars of Providence. All right. In the NBA on this Sunday, there were There were five games on tap. Your Knicks, Mr. D'Amato, were in Chicago, and guess what?
Yeah, they lost.
115-96. Michael had 33. Charles Oakley had 14. Celtics won at home over the Sixers. Lakers did not play.
Okay. The standings. They're missing P. Enos Kanter.
Celtics lead the Atlantic 53-19. Hawks lead the Central 48-23. Mavericks lead the Midwest 48-24. Celtics with the best. The Lakers with the best record in the league at 56-15. And finally, on the frozen pond, your Rangers were off on this day, Mr. D'Amato. JR, our two teams played, both wins. Bruins beat the Blackhawks 8-6, while the Whalers won at home 7-4 over the Blues. And that is your Pop Culture Corner. Back to the Silverdome.
We go backstage. We're Mean Gene chatting with Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan about their huge main event match. Bobby says Andre will become champion tonight. He's been undefeated for 15 years, and Hogan's never faced a man like this, of course, except for when he did. Hulkamania is over and dead, and the history books will be shut once and for all. Andre's the favorite around the world, and he can't be defeated. He says Hogan has had three good years, but it's all over. That brings us to our next match. As Coco Beware battles the natural Butch Reed. A big showcase here for Butch Reed and Slick. Set to battle the workhorse Birdman Coco. Jesse's back in the booth as Coco's flapping his arms on the cart ride. Good for him to get a slot here. Well earned so far. Jesse name drops Barry Blaustein. Says this is a match he's been waiting to see. Jesse also puts over Slick's suit. Says he's ready for downtown Detroit. And says the B in Coco's name stands for Buckwheat. And he has a brother named Stymie. Jesse just comes right. It's like he thought of all these things while he was riding all the way back up the elevator to the booth. He's like, all right, how many racist things can I say? And then when I get back immediately. We start with a lockup. And Coco uses his speed to duck and dodge. But Reed eventually catches him. Starts to lay in some blows. Coco dodges a backdrop and comes back with a drop kick that sends Reed to the floor. Reed returns and catches Coco with his head down and now goes to work with his power arsenal. Coco reverses a whip and takes Reed over with a hip toss and lays in some hard right and left hands and another drop kick for two. Coco follows with a small package for two and gets a crossbody block. Reed rolls through and hooks the tights for the win. Coco jumps Reed but Slick hammers Coco from behind. That brings out Tito Santana to make the save and strips Slick down, tearing all his clothes off. This was fine, nothing special. Reed didn't really look very good at all. Coco had some nice fire in spots, but they weren't really given much time to tell a story. I went one star for this. And just like Beefcake coming out the match, you know, the Piper match, we get Santana randomly showing up here. I know he had kind of an issue going on with Slick and Butch Reed on TV. But, again, kind of odd that he comes out here and gets involved. So, just kind of a time filler, John.
Yeah, this was really a waste. And once again, they really can't put a – God forbid they put over a heel – like strong, like Tito had to come out and practically raped Slick. Boy. He really tore his pimp suit up. Nice.
If there's one heel that like could have used this to go over strong, it was right here. You know what I mean? Like, just do it.
Definitely. And I don't even recall. And then they didn't really do nothing. Like, you figured there would be a hot Tito Butch Reed feud coming out of this, but it didn't really materialize. So they went. You can see they're really going overboard on making everybody happy. But there's have to be every match. I mean, so there's a little booking issues there that they're still trying to figure out for these big shows. But it looked like they were just trying to make everybody happy and have a face look good on pretty much every match.
Yeah, I gave this a star as well. This was a perfect. Filler between what we just had and what obviously we are about to have. I don't know why Butch Reed just couldn't win this clean, but I agree with you, JR. He looked pretty lousy in this match. Your runtime, clearly not much. It was 3:39, so probably I think it's the shortest match on the show. Coco was here in the right spot, and Butch Reed is just Butch Reed. Not much more to say. This was really just a fill. Good spot for this match because what we just had with all the drama and tension with the six-man and obviously what we are about to talk about. So good spot for this match, but you know, Coco does the right thing. Tito coming out. All this, like, I mean, look, I get, obviously we get the way things worked in the late 80s in the Federation era with baby faces. You know, you want everybody to smile and be happy, but sometimes you need heels to win. And I don't think one heel walked away clean today, right. Even in their wins. It was just kind of annoying. And again, Tito coming out when he really didn't need to. It's kind of silly, but just a fill for what we are about to embark on.
All right, backstage, Randy Savage cuts a promo. He's geared up for tonight, saying history beckons the Macho Man. Gene is in with Steamboat, says of George Steele in his corner, and this is Ricky's last shot at the title. Steamboat says their time has finally come, and they'll clash like titans, but there will only be one winner, and he will come away with the title. And that does bring us to our Intercontinental Championship match as Ricky the Dragon Steamboat battles Randy Macho Man Savage. Big time anticipation here, an excellently built feud we covered in great detail last week. These two have warred for months. We've seen a serious injury, an amazing recovery, voice lessons, and everything else. George Steele's in the mix here, too, because we're trying to pay that story off that's been going on for about 14 months. Two tremendous workers set to battle over the gold. Savage and Liz look fantastic, as always, decked out in a glorious robe, looking like stars. Gorilla reminds us that it was nearly 14 months ago that Savage stole the Tito from title from Tito.
Stole the Tito?
Stole the Tito from title. Steamer gets a huge pop as he arrives with George Steele in tow. We start with a stalemate as Gorilla talks about Jesse and others saying Steamboat would never return. Savage regroups outside, but Steamboat takes control with arm drags and then a choke lift and slam that sends Macho to the floor. Steamboat chases after him, allowing Macho to catch him coming back inside. Macho works over the neck and throat as Jesse calls Savage the best talent in wrestling today. Gorilla puts him over as a fighting champion. The crowd rallies the challenger as he dodges a charge and goes to work on the arm. Savage catches Steamboat with a back elbow and chucks him to the floor. Savage clubs him back in, smacks him in the throat, and kicks him back outside. Savage mares him back in inside the ring and starts mixing in precise strikes and pin attempts. Savage comes back with a few arm drags and gets near falls on shoulder blocks. But Savage recovers with a great high knee to the back of the neck. Excuse me. Savage pitches Steamboat, but he hangs on and skins the cat. But Savage sends him right back outside with a clothesline. Steamer gets knocked over the barricade as Steele helps him back over into the ring. Jesse flips out about the interference, saying he should have been counted out. His Gorilla says Steele is just a friend, which made me laugh. Savage knocks Steamer outside again, and this time meets him with an axe blow off the top. Savage sends Steamer back in and levels him with another axe blow and gets a two after an elbow. Savage goes back to the neck, snapping Steamer across the top rope for two. Macho keeps pouring on the offense, mixing in strikes and suplexes, maniacally going for near falls after every move. Jesse credits Steamboat for absorbing this offense and hanging on, but says it's all over for the ref. It would have been all over if the ref was not for his slow counts out there. Steamboat ducks a charge and flips Savage high over the top rope into the floor. Back inside, Steamboat hits a big chop to the head off the top for a super close two count, but Savage gets his foot on the rope. Steamer follows with a clothesline for two and is on fire at near falls as the crowd cheers him on. Savage keeps surviving the pin. Covers are coming fast and furious. Steamboat misses a charge in the corner, and a moment later, the ref gets knocked out cold. Savage lays out the challenger with a clothesline and drills Steamboat with the flying elbow, but there's nobody there to count. Savage is frustrated, grabs the ring bell, but George Steele yanks it from his hands. Savage kicks him down and goes back up top with the bell again, and now Steele goes up and shoves him down to the mat. Savage recovers and goes to slam Steamboat, but Steamboat rolls through with an inside cradle for the win and massive pop. Jesse is pissed about Steele and ranting and raving. All-time classic match, amazing atmosphere and pace, loaded with near falls, top-notch shelling, great offense by both guys. Savage gets the visual pin to keep himself strong as a legitimate contender. Steele gets to screw over Savage, paying off that angle, and Steamboat gets his revenge by taking what means the most to Macho, his Intercontinental title. All-time great Mania match, best in history to date to this point through three. But I will say it is, in this viewing for me, a notch below perfect. I am not going five stars. It didn't quite have the epic feel in the ending. And while it fit the story, it didn't exactly give Steamboat a big win. Like, the Steel stuff and everything else made the finish feel anticlimactic. That roll-up kind of comes out of nowhere. And also, for a big-time grudge match, there isn't much hate from Steamboat. It's kind of a finesse classic. And watching some of those other matches we watched made me think, like, we saw some really hot brawls where Steamboat was just wild and crazy and the, you know, bloody and everything else. And, you know, if you want to explain it away, you can say maybe Steamboat learned from his mistakes and tried to wrestle here so he could beat Savage his own game and take his title and not get DQ'd or anything. But this ends up being more of a finesse classic. And I just think there's a few things in rewatching it that just keep it from being perfect. It's still legendary. It's still great. It's nothing to do with, like, you know, looking back now and not understanding what it was at the time. I just think watching some of the other matches we've watched with Savage and Steamboat and just knowing where we are in history, I just think it's a notch below five. If we did quarter stars in this show, I'd probably be closer to 4.75, but I'm going to go 4.5 because I just don't think it's a perfect match yet. I just don't think we've seen it. I don't think we've had a five-star match yet since we've been doing these shows. So all that, go ahead, spew your venom, Scott. I'll start with you.
I have no venom whatsoever. I never speak venom about this match.
No, I meant about me.
I don't agree with you, but I'm not gonna tear your head off. I'm gonna be very good in explaining. I don't disagree with a couple of your points. I don't care in the sense that in the sense that it doesn't ruin the five stars for me. It is five stars for me. It'll be five stars for me till the day I die. It is the first perfect match of the pay-per-view era, and it's still perfect to this day. I think you actually explained why the match. You think it kind of takes away from it, but in essence, I think you just explained why the match is not what the others were. I like the fact that instead of Steamboat, I don't want to say lowering himself, but instead of Steamboat going into that frenetic, chaotic pace that Savage likes, he forced Savage to have to stay within himself when he didn't need to because he was the champion, not the challenger. So I think psychologically, you could say that Steamboat went in thinking that way. Johnny Reckless always never gives this match five stars because he hates the George Steele thing. I don't really care. The George Steele thing does nothing for me. I don't really care. I don't really care.
Of the offenses I listed, to me, that's actually the least one. As much as I hate Steele, at least it pays off the story.
Right.
But I just don't think they get Steamboat off to a strong start. And this is actually something I want to chronicle as we move forward with Steamboat's reign. I just don't think he looks like he gets a visual loss, which I get. You want to keep Savage strong. Then Steele has to save him, and then he gets kind of like a desperation roll-up. Like, he doesn't get like a – I don't know. This just felt like a moment where he needed a dominant, convincing win to end this feud. It's just – it felt like – you know, John, you mentioned before, like, okay, we finally learned that we're going to pay off feuds here. This actually doesn't. Like, I feel like in retrospect, in lore, it's like the blow-off to their angle. But if you, going forward, it continues. Like, this isn't it. And they don't treat it like it's the end. So it's – I don't know. It kind of feels like it's a piece of a puzzle, which is what keeps it from five for me. But go ahead, Scott. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to get that.
I don't think it was meant to anyway. So I'm fine with that, too. I'm just talking about this match in a vacuum. And in that instance, it's the greatest match I had ever seen to that point. And I know there's a lot of, and I get debates on this all the time, it's still my favorite, and I still think it's the best WrestleMania match of all time. Now, we obviously aren't going to, you know, tip our hands and talk about the next 20-something WrestleManias, but 30-something. But you had two guys who were different kinds of workers, handled themselves differently psychologically and in terms of storytelling, and somehow fit together like a glove, realized the magnitude of the moment. And a lot of people think that they were not bitter because obviously we all know what match sold the tickets and brought the 93,000 in the building. But they probably wanted to be like, we got to go out here. We got to steal this fucker. Let's not go out here and throw a 2.5-star forgettable and then leave everything for the guys at the end. Let's make people remember us. And we talk about Savage and how I had said throughout our run that Savage learned the WWF style and got out of the whole Memphis stalling shit much earlier than I thought he had when I first remember the run. Yet I still say that this was the match where Savage realized, wow, I got to stop with the running around the ring and fucking around with Elizabeth and actually get in here and wrestle. And he did that here against a guy who really you can't have a shitty match with even if you tried. The crowd was ridiculous. And Gorilla acknowledges the babyface pop at the beginning for Savage. He does acknowledge it because there is one. Not a big one. I mean, not as big as Steamboat's, but there was some. So you knew that you're also dealing with two guys that believe it or not, both all the fans like. The storytelling was great. The announcing speaks for itself. Jesse says it. This is the greatest match. This is one of the greatest matches I've ever seen. 23 two counts. Savage with 16 of them. And I always wanted every time I watch it, I always want the ref bump to annoy me, because there's a lot of matches that I've watched historically where ref bumps were always unnecessary. And there's one match that takes place 20 years later in this city that a ref bump pisses me off. This one doesn't. Do we need a visual loss? Probably not. And I'm not worried about the roll-up, because it does give credence to the fact that Savage, that these two warriors pummeled the shit out of each other, and Steamboat had that just last 3 seconds of energy to get the win. I'm okay with that, too. And just accepting the magnitude of the moment that they were the number two match on the show, that they didn't have to be a throwaway and they didn't have to be a mediocre match. Like, I mean, honestly, in terms of in-ring, I mean, Adrian and Piper was mediocre. Everything else about that match is great, and that's what kind of boosts the grade a little bit. Here, the match alone is all you need. But on top of the announcing and on top of the crowd and on top of the histrionics, this is one for the ages and will always be one for the ages, John. And again, I could watch this match on a loop and never get sick of it. Never.
You both make some great points. And I just think reviewing this now 30 years later, it kind of speaks to where the business is, where wrestling is today as far as titles and belts. I mean, Gorilla and Jesse in the commentary, they emphasize it over and over again that this is Steamboat's last shot at the title, and everything in the commentary was based on getting the pin and getting the title. So it didn't really have to. And also, Steamboat, his finishing maneuver is like a high cross body. He doesn't really have a devastating, like, finishing maneuver that really devastates the opponent. His moves were all geared towards pinning his opponent, and not really with not a lot of like violence or devastation. But also, I have to disagree with you a little, Justin, because at the beginning, Steamboat lifts Savage up by his neck, like in a move that like Hulk does, and he lifts him up, and he's choking him by the throat. So he did show a little viciousness in the first couple minutes, and also we spoke about it like last week that a lot of the house show matches leading up to it, he got DQ'd, and there was a lot of viciousness shown then, and so now here, it was all about just getting the belt.
I think it has felt a little bit like, if you're just watching this show, like, so say me as a kid, like, whatever, renting or finding this tape, even if it's like weeks after, like, you wouldn't know really that they were like in a blood feud. You know what I mean? Because it just isn't presented in any way that way. I know they keep saying, like, this is his last shot, go for the pin. And yeah, he does a choke. It doesn't feel like it's just missing that little bit of something that makes it stand out. Like, I don't know if I even realized, like, until I went back.
I mean,
they showed
the angles before the match. They showed the angles of what led up to it. But like I said, for the commentary, Jesse and Gorilla, they really weren't emphasized. Oh, you know, Savage tried to destroy his throat. They were more like emphasizing this is Steamboat's last shot. It was all geared towards the title. And I mean, you know, none of us like it, but it is what it is. The Beauty and the Beast thing was popular, so Steel had to get his involvement. And
yeah, like I said, I mean, that was the least thing that bothered me. Maybe play it out in the ring with Steamboat. Like, have him maybe grab the bell and go to hit him, and then he, like, almost, you know, and then he stops and realizes what it is. Like, tell it that way, you know what I mean? Like, just show a little bit. Like, you don't have to hammer it in the head, but just a little bit. Like, maybe he goes to grab a chair, or maybe he's, like, goes to punch the ref or something. Like, just tell a little bit that he's on edge and he's fighting it. Like, he just seems calm out there. And I know that's kind of what he is, but I don't know. Like, to me, that just lacks a little bit. Like, where they didn't show him, like, being on edge enough. Like, where he's teetering the line of, you know, and this, I know it's nitpicking, but to me, when you get to 5-star territory, you nitpick. So I'm just nitpicking that they didn't show him on the verge of maybe, you know, an internal battle between wanting to murder this guy who almost ended his life and take his title because it'll hurt him the most. Like, he's not really showing, like, that he's in between this war internally, which to me is what it should have been.
Right. It's all good points, but I think they just went away from it being a blood feud to more about it being about the title. And that's where it wound up, I think.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep saying that I think chemistry-wise, Steamboat almost forced Savage to have to wrestle his match. And because this was about the belt at this point. I get the blood feud thing, JR. I do. It's a very good point. But I'm countering that by saying Steamboat took Savage out of the chaos and forced him to have to stay relegated.
But they don't say that. Like, no one – that's not told.
Well, I mean
it's not told at all. You're saying that now. But, I mean, it's not really – that's not – if you watch the match, that's not the story. They're not saying, like, look at Steamboat. He's making Savage come to him and wrestle his – like, no, Savage isn't just a brawler. Like, this isn't, like, fucking King Kong Bundy or something. I mean, Savage is an elite technical wrestler, too. So he's not really, like, making him play his own game, like, going out of his comfort zone.
True, but Savage as champion – and, again, you're talking about Gorilla and Jesse, who, as great as they are, and they're the greatest broadcast team of all time, they don't really go that – no pun intended – cerebral into the announcing in that aspect. But remember, Savage is the champion. So Savage would have been perfectly fine ducking and bobbing and weaving and getting the fuck out of there. And,
but he could have done
Steamboat
that even if Steamboat is wrestling a clean match. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Right. I just feel like they don't – I don't know. I think you're projecting what you want the story to be into the match, which is fine. But they just never say anything along the lines of, oh, Steamboat's making him wrestle a clean match in his style. Because Savage wrestles clean matches. We've seen it. So I don't know. I don't buy that one. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think that there's no doubt for me that the story got told perfectly. And it's the first perfect match of the modern pay-per-view era, and it's the standard bearer for years and years to come as the greatest match of all time. So, and Ricky Steamboat is your new Intercontinental Champion, and I think we all knew after this match that the page was being turned for Savage. I don't think there's any doubt about that too. And I think,
but it isn't. They don't turn the page. This feud continues pretty much.
I'm saying in more of an abstract way. I'm not saying, like, literally, yeah, and then tomorrow he gets a world title. So
you said it's clear that after Mania his page is turning, but it's not really. He pretty much is in this feud for a few more months, like at least into the summer, into the fall.
But we don't see any more big matches between these two anymore after this, so it is kind of sad that they're
right. Yeah. Well, we do see angle progression on TV, but yeah, not a match.
Yeah, but I think you also see Savage kind of be able to take a little more control of himself. And we'll talk about it on our next show next Monday. That Savage just even feels like a bigger. I mean, not that it would need to take much, but he even feels even bigger than he already is, and that speaks volumes. Because now you're going to start seeing, as 1987 continues, the roster once again start feeling a little bit different, and he ends up becoming an integral part of it. So, having said that. As John said earlier, another huge feud is coming to a head in our next match.
John, were you done? Because I kind of cut into your thoughts there. I don't know if
I just wanted to reiterate how at the time for the WWF, that match was so groundbreaking. There was nothing like that that was ever seen before, with the two counts, with like every move just being so important.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Jesse kind of really put it over, like in the middle of the match. Jesse said, "This is the greatest match I ever saw." I think that really.
In fairness, they talk about Pedro Morales versus Renee Gallet as main events and great.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I ever heard that out of Jesse.
Jesse. I agree with you, JR. Gorilla thinks every match is a main event, but Jesse.
Not Jesse. That really was eye opening when he said that. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with him in that. Gorilla thinks every match is a main event. But having Jesse say it does, I think, add some gravitas to it.
That's the last thing I want to say. I just think now, 30 years later, we're a little jaded because now guys are doing triple Lindy moonsaults off the roof.
That's not even my criticism, though. I'm going the other way. I'm saying it's not like gritty enough, you know? I'm saying it's almost too polished for what the match should have been.
Well, either way, it goes down in the annals as you know, the standard bearer for future, not just Intercontinental title matches, but just the mid-card itself and how that title has kind of its own identity as well. So,
all right.
Okay, now we move on to a feud, as Johnny mentioned earlier, is also burning red hot and comes to a head here.
Yeah, Mean Gene's backstage with Jake the Snake Roberts and Alice Cooper. Talk about Jake's big match and a recent guitar attack by the Honky Tonk Man. Roberts remembers what happened and says Honky had his shot, but he didn't make it count. because he's still standing. Cooper says he'll be keeping tabs on Jimmy Hart, and he's in his hometown tonight. And he says it very eloquently, so good on him. Gene is then with Honky and Jimmy Hart. Honky says Peggy Sue's at ringside, and the people are here to watch him sing and dance, and they'll get to hear his hit song, not the hit songs of Alice Cooper. And that does bring us to our big match between Jake the Snake Roberts and the Honky Tonk Man, guys that have flipped roles over the last few months. Jake the Snake, of course, was a heel. He gets turned face by the fans, and the fans turned the Honky Tonk Man heel because they hated him. On February 21st, of course, if you remember, on Superstars, Jake Roberts had the Snake Pit segment with the Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart as guests. Roberts was going through a face turn at the time, becoming popular. And during the interview, Honky hits Jake in the back with a guitar, injuring him and starting him on a dependence of prescription pain medication, as we talked about in the past. Of course, the guitar was supposed to be gimmicked, but it wasn't, and it really fucked up Jake's neck. And back, and here we are today. So, adds a lot of heat to the feud, but also set Jake down a dark path personally. Big time in match and slot for Honky here is picking up a lot of steam as a heel, being presented much more seriously as a threat as 1987 has moved along. Jake and Alice Cooper, a perfect fit. Jake already seems like a natural face at this point. Didn't take long. Jake jumps Honky before the bell, yanking him into the ring and slugging away before he can even get his jumpsuit off. Jake buries a knee lift and Honky bails and disrobes. Jake follows him out and chops and punches away before slinging him back inside. Honky rolls out again, but Jake follows again and slams him on the floor, punches away. Back inside, Honky catches a charge at Jake with a knee lift and starts to work the arm and upper body. Jake battles back and goes for the DDT, but Honky slips free and slides outside. Jake heads out and fends off Jimmy, but Honky's able to send him in hard into the ring post. Alice comes over and helps Jake get back in the ring. Honky maintains control with some basic strike offense, stalling and preening a bit instead of pouncing and covering when he has chances. Honky loads up the shake, rattle, and roll, but Jake blocks it with a backdrop. Honky maintains control and punches away in the corner, but Jake catches him with an inverted atomic drop. Jake unloads punches and sends Honky flying with a backdrop before punching him to the apron. Jake keeps hammering away and goes for the DDT, but Jimmy grabs his leg to block it. Jake takes a swing at Jimmy, but Honky rolls him up and hooks the rope to steal the win. Honky runs away after the bell, leaving Jimmy alone. Alice comes in and distracts Jimmy, so Jake hooks him from behind. Alice then grabs Damien and tortures Jimmy with a snake until he wriggles free and runs off when Honky pulls him to safety. Surprisingly good match here. I thought Honky held up his end of the bargain well, despite his weak offense. The finish was a little shaky, but if Honky's going to win, you have to have him cheat. Jake is already bulletproof. A loss like this doesn't hurt him at all, and it helps Honky keep building his heat up. I thought it was a good cool-down match, and better than expected here. John, I went 2 stars on this.
Yeah, I give a couple, too, and this was a huge upset. Everybody just expected Jake to destroy Honky, but... In hindsight, it was a good decision.
Right.
It catapulted Honky to bigger and better things than what we saw. And like you said, Jake could take a loss here. And as we said before, a couple of the faces got to go down. But of course, once again, after the match, they had to get the faces got to get their shine as Alice and Jake abuse friggin' Jimmy Hart with that snake, man. And poor Jimmy, man. He got his ass kicked by Piper. I mean, Jimmy did solid work on this.
Yeah.
Once again, taking some snake abuse. And I just wish Jake didn't come down to any music yet. His theme wasn't around yet. So they at least could have gave Alice a couple bucks and came down to
right.
Schools Out or something.
Yeah,
schools
they got out to play. play coming out.
Yeah, they missed a boat on that.
I think you made a good point, too, with the Jake thing. Like, that's probably a match at the time that made, like, no sense with the finish. But as you see where it goes.
Everybody just thought he was going to just DDT him in 2 minutes. But in hindsight, it was a real good decision because they made something out of Honky, who's not much in the ring. But he does a lot of bullshit, and he got by with a lot of bullshit for many years. It was a successful run.
Yeah, that made sense in retrospect. But at the time, it's like, what the fuck? All right, Scott, what did you think of this one?
Your runtime, 7:44. Oh, and the runtime of your previous match, longest match of the night, Savage Steamboat, 14:33. This match, 7:44. I think I gave this 2.5. Let me just get my shoe in here. Yeah, 2.5. I liked it. I thought it was good, and I'm not a big Honky fan at all. This was another one where I expected Honky to win, but I have zero problem with Jake taking the pin here. Honky needed it more. Jake's bulletproof. How impressive is Jake Roberts at this point, guys, that he's been with the company, what, 9 months, and already he's bulletproof? Or has it been a year? Did he debut in February?
Yeah, he was in WrestleMania too. So
yeah, okay. Oh, that's true. Yeah. So,
but even more impressively,
it's that, and already he's bulletproof.
Well, even that though, he's only been a face for like 2 months, and he's bulletproof as a face. Like they're not like trying to prop him up with wins. You know what I mean? Like they're already having him lose because he's so fucking over with the snake and everything else.
It's crazy. It's amazing how much he's over. And I enjoyed the match. It was pretty good. It was a lot better than I thought than I remember it being. And with Jake turning, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, guys, about Piper. You got Jake turning face, some other guys turn face. I just think Piper, there was no room for him. You know what I mean? I think it was fine for Piper to go on sabbatical,
right?
Because
Brutus was going to
Brutus was turning. Yeah, Brutus turning. You have Jake turning. Mm-hmm. You have somebody else turning later. So I don't think there's any room for him at this point. I think the face side was getting pretty loaded.
Right.
I think it was fine for Piper to go out.
Yeah,
and,
right. That's what we're saying is, too, is like, who the fuck would he even feud it with? There's like no one.
Exactly.
It's just a tough spot being a face right now.
Yeah, it is, because there's fucking so many of them. And you see some more switches as we move along as well. But a great match. Better than I thought. In terms of star ratings, if you want to just go or just match quality, this show has spiked immensely from earlier in the night. This has been fantastic. And Honky, you know, continues being a smarmy little turd, and Jake is Jake. 2.5 stars and big win for Honky, but Jake gets his heat back. And I love how Gorilla and Jesse make fun of Alice Cooper's fucking anorexic arms. It looks like he's been to the gym, Gorilla.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. It was a great match, and Jake's fine. Honky's in good shape, and so we look good with somewhat of an upset.
All right.
Next, JR, what do we got? A little tag action? Yeah.
Well, before that, Mean Gene comes to the ring and reveals that there's a brand new indoor attendance record has been set with 93,173 here tonight. Jesse says they've broken the record set by the Rolling Stones in New Orleans. So there you go. Believe it or not, that's what it is, according to them. All right, next up, we do have a tag team match, and that features the Killer Bees taking on the Foreign Legion of the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff. The Legion comes out with Slick, whose clothes are still in tatters from earlier.
look ridiculous. Can't even change.
It's great. So, no, it's great selling. I'm glad they did it.
I know. No, I agree. It's really funny.
Nikolai sings the Soviet national anthem to cascading boos and flying trash, but Hacksaw Jim Duggan, making pretty much his debut almost, runs to the ring and chases off the Legion with his 2x4. Gorilla says Duggan has vowed that Nikolai would never sing the anthem again whenever he's around. The Bees get a very warm welcome, and it's cool that they get a slot on the card. The Legion attacks at the bell, but the Bees fend them off and hammer away, as there's been no control yet in this one. Nikolai ends up outside, and the Bees double-team Sheik a bit. And the Bees have some pretty swank socks on. Really accentuates their look, I thought. The Bees keep tagging and double-teaming Sheik, working at a crisp pace. Blair gets to 2 on a dropkick as Nikolai makes the save. Things break down into a brawl with all 4 as Duggan stalks her on ringside and a USA chant fires up. Nikolai takes control and works over Brunzel, locking in a bear hug. Brunzel breaks the hold, but Legion maintains control. Sheik gets a 2 off a gut-wrench suplex, but Brunzel pelts him with a high knee and makes the tag, which the referee doesn't see. Makes Blair go back to the apron. The Legion double teams, but Nikolai and Blair run around the outside. Sheik hooks Brunzel in the camel clutch inside, and Duggan finally has enough, comes in and levels Sheik with a 2x4 to draw the DQ. The Legion staggers off as Duggan issues more warnings to them about revenge. A rock-solid tag match, perfect execution. I like the heat segment. The end hurt it a bit, but they really leveraged it to establish Duggan to the major crowd. We'll talk about him and his past once he gets in the ring later in future episodes, but he's here. Fun tag outing overall. I thought all 4 looked good. I went 2.5 on this, Scott.
I gave this 2. It was a lot of fun. Duggan, as I'm watching the right now, I'm in the middle of his early run in Mid-South in '82, and this is exactly how he looked: the jeans, the shirt with the cutoff sleeves, the bandana around his. So he still had the Mid-South look. 5 years later, obviously he was there all the way up to that point. My favorite Iron Sheik tights, the 3/4 that say Iran on either side. I always liked those; were always cool, and that's actually what his action figure was, had those tights. But a good match otherwise. Your official time is 5:41. Seemed longer. But another good spell between our last match and our big one next. Killer Bees, I feel like they still have some kind of juice left as a team.
They got great socks. Great socks.
You know, great socks, great tights. I feel like they really I'm not sure if I feel like they're still in that rub of top babyface teams. They are, and they'll get their shots with the – I mean, we've already seen a couple shots they've had with the Hart Foundation. I'm sure they'll get more. We'll see more. The Foreign Legion is definitely I think they're like the dream team. I think they've reached the end of the line. You could see it. They're totally cooked, which makes me wonder why they didn't job in this match. So I didn't get that. I thought that was kind of strange. Figured the Killer Bees could get a clean win here. So I was a little perplexed at that myself. I don't know if this had to do with, you know, the unpredictability of Duggan being a fucking jackass with a stupid 2x4, but I don't know why the Killer Bees just didn't win this match clean. Makes no sense to me at all. So, John, do you feel like – your thoughts on the match, and do you feel like Duggan kind of ruined what could have been a better match?
Yeah, Duggan just overshadowed these guys, and the poor Bees and Sheikh and Volkov, you could see that they didn't have much plans for these two. As it was all just all about Duggan, which I kind of agree with you, Scott. As far as Duggan goes, he was just a little overbearing on this. They should have just had a squash with Duggan then to get him over.
Yeah, I mean, it was multiple times today, JR. This goes back to when you were saying about Beefcake in the Adonis match and Tito in the Butch Reed Coco match. Like, why was Vince like throwing all this extra shit at the end of every match?
I thought this one kind of made sense because the match is a throwaway and you're just trying to. You're basically just trying to establish what Duggan is, right? He's anti-foreign. But yeah, to John's point, they could have had him just fight like Nikolai or something. Just have the match, you know.
This the ultimate cool down because, we got the main event coming up. So you can't have nothing too hot, I guess. But it does get Duggan over. So it is what it is.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's Duggan. You know me. It's not going to get any better. So, but again, the Foreign Legion definitely feels like the Dream Team earlier, like they're at the end of the line. I mean, they're even more at the end of the line than the Dream Team are. So the fact that they actually won this match still makes no sense to me at all. But
and the crowd does eat up Hacksaw's stuff, so you got to give him kudos for that.
Poor fucks. All right. So there you go. That's what happens when you're from Detroit. So, JR, we have arrived.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
This Rob Houston Memorial Fuckface Hacksaw Jim Duggan update is dedicated to the memory of Anthony Armento's dad. Rest in peace, my old friend. In March 1987, Jim Duggan was right here. You're talking about him right now. I don't fucking need to give any stupid update. Hey, Criscolo, you cunt face. How you doing? How many turkeys did you swallow whole this weekend, you slob?
Wow. This is unprecedented. You have crossed the time stream, Vincent Kennedy McMahon. I can't believe it.
You can't believe it. How many turkeys did you eat? I fucking asked you a question.
667.
Well, that must have been a real
bitch.
That must have been a real
protein, Vince, for you.
Must have been a real
protein.
Fucking pleasant morning. Good thing you have that live-in maid there now with you, so that helped out, I'm sure. Hey, speaking of turkey shit, how you doing, D'Amato? You bang any ugly dudes yet, you ball bag?
Mr. McMahon, I always want to ask you, that female ref, did you really Cosby her and give her a Cincinnati bow tie in the back of that limo?
That's my boo, you bitch! I hope you've been saying nice things about all my bays. Aretha Franklin! That bitch goes hard! I never should have let her go, but I know she's right up your alley, D'Amato, you fucking freak. Hey, speaking of freaks, Criscolo, you been slaying any of those in that bachelor crib of yours? Any trim? Any rump swabs want to grind on your mini candy cane, you jackweed?
Well, the limo's been stuck here. You know, Armento hasn't been driving it much, and you don't want to know what's happened to Rotella, so the bitches have been coming here because the limo hasn't been riding around.
You leave my pussy posse out of this, you scrub. That's it? That's all you got?
Highways and byways. They're missing you. Where are you? Where have you been?
You're an idiot.
Man, I got a hottie for you named Peg. She used to give me a rusty trombone every Thursday.
Listen, guys, since this is VKM entry number 69, I'm going to be out forever after this one. I'm going to go out on top as the hood rats say. I finally found myself a ride or die chick to settle down with, fellas. I'm going to go get a nice colonial in the country, milk some cow dick, get some milk, live off the land, and call it a day. I even
Peace
had Claire...
Out.
What?
Peace out, you genetic jackhammer.
I even had Claire write me some original poetry for my special lady. He came... He told me he'd come up with this all on his own. I'm going to read it for you here tonight. You ready?
Go for it, Vince.
Coming over in my direction. So thankful for that. It's a blessing. Yeah. Turn every situation into heaven. Yeah. Oh, you are. My sunshine on the darkest day. Got me some feeling some kind of way. Make me want to savor every moment slowly, slowly. You fit me tailor-made. Love how you put it on. Got the only key how to turn it on. The way you nibble on my ear. The only words I want to hear. Baby, take it slow so we can last long. Oh, too... Claire, why is this in Spanish? I don't know Spanish. You wrote this? Oh, tu eres y aman y soy mit. Why did you... Can I skip the Spanish part? No? Do some of it? All right, hang on. Ya, mi está gustando más de lo normal. Despacito. Quiero res... Are you sure you wrote this? All right. I'll get it printed on the card, like you said. Anyway. VKM, signing out. Hope you fuckers all burn in hell. Armento, get the limo. Claire, get the dildo out of Martella's cunt. Give him that back brace so we can hurry up and run to the limo before Fink finds out we're fucking missing. We gotta get the fuck to Westchester. Mike McGurk, daddy's coming home. Vince wasn't going to miss WrestleMania 3, I guess.
No, I just don't think Vince wanted to miss the 69th entry.
He's fired up about that attendance record.
I think he just needed the 69th entry is what he really wanted. I don't think he was going to live without that. Ooh. Should have known that was coming.
Yeah.
I don't know what's worse. The way to listen to Claire's poetry, the way to listen to Derek LaRue's voice for the last time. I don't know what was fucking worse.
Sugar Tits has returned. My son was singing Despacito tonight. Gene right. talks to Andre, the giant Bobby Heenan. Andre says he'll be leaving as world champion tonight. Bobby says he can feel it. Andre's going to make him famous and put him in the record books. I got a question for you guys. Jeff, I'll plug that here too, I guess. On Jeff Learns Wrestling a few weeks ago, we covered WrestleMania 3. And he was actually disappointed that Andre spoke here. He liked how stoic he was in the promo earlier in the night and said he kind of let him down a bit when he speaks. Like, he liked him just staring solemnly in the background as Bobby did the talking. What did you guys think about that? Did you like that he spoke here, or do you think it would have been better if he didn't?
I actually agree with Jeff. I didn't realize it till today as well. I like the fact that Andre didn't speak. We knew he spoke. I mean, we knew it's not like he wasn't like another wrestler a few years later,
right.
but
yeah, yeah.
who didn't speak for like 3 years. But I like the fact that like Andre didn't need to talk anymore. Let Bobby do the talking. He wants to fight. He wants his title. So yeah, I was actually a little bummed. I have to agree. I don't know what you think, John. I agree with that. I wish he hadn't talked either.
That's a great point. But it wasn't like Andre made like a big speech. He just said a couple sentences, and it really wasn't anything memorable. So. The brain did most of the talking, like you guys said.
All right, there you go. So, Gene then chats with Hulk Hogan and does his usual and talks about what will happen when Andre feels the wrath of Hulkamania. Bob Uecker heads out as the guest ring announcer for our main event. Jesse says hi to Terry, Tyrell, and Jade. Mary Hart then comes out to be the guest timekeeper as well, and that sets the stage for Hulk Hogan taking on Andre the Giant, challenging him for his world heavyweight title. You guys all know the backup. You all know the build. You all know everything that led us to this moment. And, of course, if you don't, we covered it all a week ago. So check out episode 470 if you haven't yet, because we're going to dive right into the match here tonight. Epic main event, a true dream money match by any sense. The build has been epic. Really dates back a year to Hogan beating Bundy and beating up Bobby Heenan, setting up this long-standing feud that has led to Bobby getting two of Hulk Hogan's friends to turn on him in an attempt to get revenge and take his title. Andre's a legit threat here. Hogan could really be in trouble. The buzz and atmosphere for Andre and Heenan's arrivals off the charts. Their presence, second to none. Heenan's jacket, perfect for this big night. He looks amazing. Hogan gets a monster pop. It is a force of energy as he power walks to the ring. We open with the legendary stare down, building energy, setting the stage. Andre strikes first as Hogan fires back and tries for a slam. But Andre falls on him for a close near fall. Then Andre, Bobby, and Jesse
All think may have been a three count. Remember that one. Hulk is hurting and crawling around as Andre starts to hammer away at the back and knees him hard in the head. Andre slams Hogan twice with ease and steps on the back as his confidence swells. Andre continues to slowly work the back and sternum and then decks Hulk with a hard headbutt before choking away. Hulk slithers free from the corner to a huge pop and starts to lay in right hands, chops, and elbows before running him into the buckle 10 times. Andre teeters but doesn't fall and catches a limping charging Hulk with a huge boot to the face. Andre hooks in a bear hug, and after some dramatic beats, Hulk survives the breaks the hold with a flurry of right hands. Andre staggered again as Hogan barrels him into the barrels into him, and Andre cuts him down again and then kicks him to the floor. Andre heads outside and batters the champ out there, but Hulk dodges him and the giant headbutts the post. Hulk peels back the mat off the floor and tries for a pile driver, but Andre blocks it and backflips him into the concrete. Back inside, Hogan drills Andre the clothesline to finally take the big man to the mat to a monster pop. Hogan then slams Andre in a super iconic moment and finishes him off with the leg drop to an absurd pop from the crowd to defend his title. It was a picture-perfect finish, continues to make Hogan a star, and his star shines brightly. This is a tremendous heavyweight slugfest. It felt like a big-time dream match. Psychology was strong and well-executed. The crowd heats off the charts, and a worthy close to a big-time show. All-time dream match in the Pantheon moment to end it all. However, give my little caveats. I did think it was a little slow in spots, of course, due to their obvious limitations. It made it drag a bit. Not their fault, but it does affect the match. Andre can really only do so much, and his presence carries a lot of it, but I thought it did hurt things. Hulk is awesome as always, just as he always is in everything we watch, but I thought he wrestled kind of stupid. From the early slam to the pile driver on the floor, which made no sense, he usually works a smarter match. So, again, you can maybe extrapolate and read into it a bit and say, okay, he's working outside his comfort zone because he's threatened by Andre, but I thought it made him look a little stupider than he usually does. And it's not like the slam is an instant finisher. So, like, why is he trying it right away? It's kind of a vanity spot, which, you know, in the character sense. So I thought it was out of sync for Hogan to try it there. Hogan vanquishes the giant. Heenan loses again. Is he done? Or will time tell if he comes back again? If you blend the grades, to me, the atmosphere moment is perfect. The actual work, much less. But you get a strong grade when you kind of flesh it all out. Not perfect, but I went 4 stars, which I think when you consider the actual work in the match, that's a pretty lofty grade when you factor in everything around it. So 4 stars to me and Hogan Andre. What'd you think, John?
Well, first of all, when Andre and the Brain were riding on the cart to the ring, just a visual of them getting pelted with all that garbage. It was mostly just paper, and they were no selling it, but it was just a good visual of them getting bombarded with friggin' balled up the piece of paper and just whizzing by their heads. And that was a good visual to start. And over the years, Andre got criticized for, at this stage, he was old and he couldn't move much, but he looked kind of spry at the beginning. He wasn't just really slamming Hulk. He was really throwing him a couple feet across. He wasn't just like dropping him lazily. He was giving some good slams. So Andre was real spry. And of course, the big criticism is the big bear hug spot in the middle. But when you have the crowd in the palm of your hands, I mean, you know, they didn't need to do much. They're not worried about what Dave Meltzer or what us Jamokes are going to say 30 years later, you know, whether it's going to be 3 stars or 4 stars. They had the crowd. So that rest hold at that time, they didn't have to do all these big moves. And other than that bear hug, every other move was important and it meant something. And Andre dominated most of the match. And I likened it. I hate to compare a lot of sports entertainment to real sports, but it was like a basketball game where the crowd was just dying with the home team, and the home team was trailing the whole time. And then finally, when Hulk knocked Andre down for that one time, it was like, oh, the home team tied up the game. And then when he got the big slam and pin, it's like, oh, okay, that was the winning shot. So, but overall, and Jesse and Gorilla were just on top of the game as always. Like when that spot outside the ring, when Hulk was trying to pile drive Andre outside on the wood, and Jesse was like, "Oh, that's poor sportsmanship. That's horrible sportsmanship, Gorilla." It was like Jesse was losing his mind, and they got caught up in the magnitude of the moment. And then, of course, you know, Jesse was good all night, but finally at the end, when Hulk celebrated, Jesse's got to put himself over. He's like, "I may have to come out of retirement and win this thing," which is ridiculous.
Yeah, that was a little self-serving by Jesse at the end. Yeah, I love Jesse, and he's always he's always self-serving. But this one felt
he was good all night, but then of course he had to get his shots in. He had to put himself over even during this classic match.
This, I mean, really, when you look in the dictionary under main event, this is it. The NWA tried their hardest, and you know, you had 2 years earlier, you had, or maybe a year and a half earlier, you had Dusty and Flair at Starrcade 85. But this is a main event. The pageantry, the hype, the David Goliath feeling, Bobby, just everything fit for this to be, you know, overall. The most important match in the history of the business. And Jesse said it. You know, Jesse, the master of, as bad as that comment, John, was at the end, was as great when they were both standing there and he said, this is the biggest match in the history of professional wrestling. He wasn't lying. That wasn't even kayfabe.
Gorilla's classic, the irresistible force meets the immovable,
object. Yep.
And there's two iconic moments of this match, the stare down and then the slam. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of matches don't get one. I mean, those are two legendary moments baked into the match.
For years, when we did our original written review, JR, back way back in the day, I gave this 2.5, but I was just grading the match. Mm-hmm. I also gave this I'm agreeing with you, and I'm giving this 4 stars because of the whole thing. Sometimes you just have to think outside the box on these matches. You have to. Certain circumstances create that. And we're not just talking about every Tom, Dick, and Harry match here. We're talking about, you know, again, as Jesse said, the biggest match in the history of professional wrestling. This was the first legit moneymaker in the history of the pay-per-view era. This is what Vince thought of in his mind when he bought his dad's company. This is what he was looking at as his quintessential money-making historical main event. Now, the match itself... Yeah, there's really not much Andre can do, and I agree with you, JR. Andre just kind of skulking the ring like this while Hogan's just getting beat down is just a great visual. I think that Hogan did those dumb moves because Vince wanted a lot of visuals on this night, in this match. And he wanted to see the early slam, which was a – yes, in theory, when you're talking about Hogan, is pretty idiotic. And then the pile driver on the floor, what the fuck was the point of that? Like, that's dumb. So, but it looked cool, or I think Vince was thinking it was going to look cool on camera to have Andre upside down while Hogan tried to pile drive him. But as you said, that's out of Hogan's norm of wrestling a smart match, particularly when he's the one trying to defend his title. So I thought that was also very out of character and kind of made no sense.
Yeah, and Hogan is usually wrestles smart, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and
I think against his style to like do some of the things he was doing, like especially the slam to start the match.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. But I think it was Vince.
But that was important for to stretch out for future matches.
Yeah, and it was used.
They always went back to that. They always went back to that.
Yeah, that was really the only reason, JR, was obviously to have that as some type of storyline hook.
No, I know, but you know, I'm living in
but
the.
But it made
character.
No sense. Oh no, you're right. In a vacuum,
saying, it didn't make sense for Hogan.
Yeah, no, right at that moment in time, it made no sense. But obviously, they had a reason for doing it. Be honest with you, the pile driver outside was
well, that
was dumber.
Way worse, right?
That was dumber. I just don't get. I didn't get that. I didn't get that at all. But everything about this match was perfect in a storytelling sense. Yes, the work rate, the in ring was as good as it was going to be. And we got to cut Andre some slack here. I mean, he was hurting. I mean, the visual at the end of WrestleMania 2 when he wins that Battle Royal and he's got that just exasperated look of pain on his face. And here we are a year later. He was ready to walk away from the business. And in the end, he came back for another match and barely could get through these 11 minutes, which, by the way, your official time, 11 minutes and 58 seconds. He tried his hardest. And I think the storytelling of him just being methodical, taking his time, and Jesse made a point to say it as well. He had Hogan where he wanted him. He didn't have to rush. He knew, you know, that's Andre. And I think that works to his advantage. Now, as we move down the line, we'll see that changes. But Hogan, to his credit, definitely came off as a guy who you thought was cooked. And even Gorilla, who, you know, obviously is just as big a Hogan lover as, say, Vince is, even he's like, we have to find out what this guy's really made of. And you know, obviously we get the slam and then the leg drop and you know, we're done. But you will look back historically that this is easily one of the greatest main events in the history of the business. And I know a lot of us, we talk about it on the List of Mania, a lot of people like to think literally instead of, I don't know whether the word be abstract or aesthetic, but a lot of people want to look at it literally and go, this match fucking blows. You can't do that. I'm sorry, you can't. Not here. Certain examples, you've got to take more than just the in-ring into consideration. This isn't a fucking, you know, house, MSG house show or even a Science main event or whatever. This is the biggest show in the history of the business to this point. You can't just ignore that. You've got to take that into consideration when you're thinking of this match. You have to. And that's why you and I are not, none of us are overgrading this at 4 stars. Not at all. Because this made money for the company. It put the WWF on the map. And this is what Vince's vision was, as you said, JR, earlier. This was his vision, 3.5 years ago when he bought the company from his dad, was this moment here. Mm-hmm. This main event. And so I'm sure some people are listening to us going, what the fuck is wrong with these guys? 4 stars, you out of your mind? No, we're not. Because this isn't fucking, you know, this isn't the March 29th MSG house show. There's 93,000 people in this place. You know, when wrestling fans now who were young back then who don't even watch wrestling anymore, I know somebody who was – I didn't realize this. I know somebody who was at WrestleMania 3. I had no idea. Somebody told me the other day or a couple months ago. That's pretty awesome. They may not have watched wrestling in the last like 20 years, but they were at WrestleMania 3. Or people will tell you they watched it on pay-per-view, and that's because of Hogan and Andre. It's as simple as that. Goes down as one of the greatest matches, greatest main events of all time, and cements Hulk Hogan as the alpha dog of the business.
All right, well,
and you know we have the Ric Flair arguments and that kind of thing, and I love Rick to death as we all know, but right now the alpha dog mm-hmm. of professional wrestling at this point is Hulk Hogan, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I mean, we've had debates, too, where this match, how it stands. Like, I referenced it before against other matches in this, you know, WrestleMania history and all that. We'll leave that argument for another day. It's somewhere up there.
Right.
It's one of the most unique matches in WWF history. It's really probably one of the hardest to grade and hardest to rank that they've ever had. It's just, there's so many intangibles about it, and it's just the disparity in work versus the atmosphere and meaning is so different, and there's just so much there. You know, there's just so much there that it's so hard to look at. But it's a great moment. It's an iconic moment. No one's ever going to question or doubt that. It's legendary. It's jam-packed with WrestleMania. I mean, it is WrestleMania. WrestleMania 1 may have gotten the ball rolling. 2 may have kept it rolling. But 3 is what really put it on the map is the showcase of the Immortals or, you know, whatever other terms they want to use for it. This is the moment that really got them there. So why don't we go ahead and do our awards here before we wrap things up.
This is not going to be easy. I was thinking about this today. This is not going to be easy.
No, probably not, but we'll try it. So match of the night, I mean, just based purely on work rate, or I shouldn't say work rate, based solely on star rating given out here tonight, I'm going with Savage Steamboat. It's a better match. Hogan Andre is a great moment. Steamboat Savage is a better match.
Yeah.
You guys disagree with that as far as this vote goes?
Nope.
No way.
All
right. Cousin Jr. I thought was actually pretty easy, too. I went with Coco versus Butch Reed. I thought that was, you know, there's some rough stuff in the beginning, but nothing's really bad. That was really the only match that stood out to me as bad. And even that's not awful. I mean, it probably would have been one of the top handful on an MSG show. But overall, not great.
No, I'm going with JYD.
You think so?
Yeah. You know what, JR? I agree with you, Johnny. I'm going to vote for Coco and Butch, though, but I completely understand Johnny's vote because when you look at it, Nobody gave a fuck about Coco and fucking Butch Reed. But JYD and Harley, as we said earlier, was one of the highlight matches of this card, and you expected better. So from the gravity of it, I agree with John 100%, but it wasn't as bad as Coco and Butch just as a standalone match. So I'm going to vote for Coco and Butch, but Johnny, I agree, your vote is 100% plausible because that match had more gravity to it, and it ended up being a fucking stinker. So I agree with your thinking is exact, but I'm going to go with the Butch Reed Coco match simply because the match was just terrible.
I guess that just becomes too big of a Harley race, Mark. all right.
Yeah, I love Harley, but that match was bad.
All right, Hogan Award for the MVP. I went with Hulk Hogan. I mean, none of this Andre was great. Savage and Steamboat are great, but nothing. Piper was great. None of this happens without Hogan. Him being who he was made all this possible. He worked his ass off in that main event. Psychology aside, he was just a juggernaut. It was unbelievable watching him coming down to the ring and the slam, the stare down, all of it. It's Hogan's show right now. So to me, whenever he's on, you really got to have a Herculean effort to pass him for this award in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like Savage and Steve-O cancel each other out. Because you can give either of them the MVP. We can't have like a 5-way tie.
Right.
So
I mean, my thought process was I went with them for best match. Hogan Andre to me was best moment, so I'm going with Hogan for MVP.
Hogan walked out of this building a bona fide legend.
Mm-hmm.
He punched his ticket to I know everyone says it a few years later. He punched his ticket to wrestling immortality here on this night. So I have no problem making him MVP.
What do you think, John?
John?
I agree, and that's a good point. I want to give it to like a tie for Savage and Steamboat, but like I said, they cancel each other out in Hulk. An honorable mention, I mean, not near the top of MVP, but Jimmy Hart was the way he bumped around in his matches, and honorable mention for
I mean, you could make probably like a top 10 on this show. I mean, Hogan, Andre, Savage, Steamboat, Piper, Jimmy Hart, Bobby, you know, like, it goes pretty deep.
Yeah.
All right, worst worker. This is probably a touch unfair, but by the purest sense, the cousin Junior is just the guy who wrestled the worst on the show. I'm sorry, the Uncle Elmer, I should say. I went with Danny Davis. He did his job and got his ass kicked, but in the spots where he wasn't, he just was clearly the worst guy out there. Now, I think Nikolai, you get a shot. I think JYD's up there, and I think there's a few others, but I went with Davis. Probably unfair.
Nah, man, no way. That is the way he bumped around. I mean, you got to give him credit for that. He was bumping like a man.
I don't think he was bumping though. I think he was getting. I think they were throwing him. He had to bump.
I think. Nah,
I don't think he was working. I think they were literally doing it to him.
You can't do that. You can't do that without some skill. You can't just lay like a dead fish. And
all right, well, who's your choice? Okay, convince me.
Definitely JYD. No doubt, it's got to be JYD.
I'm actually going with JYD as well.
All right, I'll make it a clean sweep. It's fine. It was unfair when I saw it.
Because, yeah, I mean, Danny Davis did what he had to do, whether it was kayfabe or not. He did what he had to do, which is fucking, you know, show a lot of ass.
Plus,
but
he got all that heat from the crowd.
Yeah.
They were bloodthirsty.
Yeah, JYD just totally tanked what needed to be a top flight. This is where, yeah, I am a Harley Mark. I'm just like you, JR. I love Harley. Mm. And that's why I blame JYD for that match sucking ass. He was terrible. And, It's not fair to Harley because this is going to be his only ever WrestleMania moment, and it's a forgettable pile of shit. So, JYD definitely.
All right, best moment of the night. Again, this is an easy one for me. Hogan slamming Andre.
No doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
No doubt.
All right, and our CD award for the biggest juice head of the night. I went Don Morocco. I thought he was just gassed out of his fucking mind on this show, and it's only going to get worse. But on a night full of juice with the Bulldogs and Hogan and everyone else, I went with Morocco here.
You had juice. I mean, Dr. Zahorian, it must have had a cramp, a pen cramp from all of his prescriptions. You had fucking Billy Jack and Herc.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Dynamite. Okay. I'm going with Dynamite.
Dynamite and Davey Boy and fucking Bravo. And
what do you got, Scott?
I'll go with Morocco, although I'm going to give honorable mention to Billy Jack because he was looking pretty – actually, that whole match, both of them, they were looking pretty they were looking veined out. But I'll give it to the Magnificent One because this is only his first taste. It gets better from here.
All right. Overall grade in the show. You guys are going to hate me. I'm going slightly under perfect. I'm going 9.5. I just think there is some downtime in here. I think it's a little lengthy. Some of the matches early – pull it down, and there's a lot of great stuff. It's nearly a perfect show. I just think in my head of like future shows to come that I think are going to be considered perfect, and I would put this a notch under them.
I know it's an age thing, probably a little bit, or not having lived through it, probably a little bit. But for me, watching it at this point, I think it's – I had it at 9 originally. I'm up to 9.5, but I can't go 10. I'm guessing you guys are both perfect.
No, I agree. Definitely those 3 or 4 kind of duds matches. Even though they it was purposely done because they had to, you know, the ebbs and flows of the card. But I think you can't give it a 10 because of those 3 or 4 stinkers.
So you're going 9.5?
Not exactly stinkers. Yeah, 9.5.
Scott,
it's a 10. It's a 10. I don't give a shit.
Never doubted that.
All right. I don't give a shit. Fuck it. No way. It's the first big show that I ever watched in my life. Yeah, and yeah, you're right, JR. I'm glad you made that point. Watching it live makes a difference for me.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And
I don't blame
even
you.
Though there were stinkers, there was something memorable about all of them.
Yeah.
Fucking Bundy almost killing a midget. I'd give that 10 stars right off the bat.
well, that's what gets it almost perfect to me. You know, like nothing really stunk. No, I mean, no, but not just that. I mean the whole thing. Like nothing really stunk. It's just it's not the perfect show. Like I think there's other shows to come that I would consider perfect. I just think this is a dip below.
I think everything meant something, and everything is memorable. Every match has something you can remember. And even if it's the match itself is bad, if you can say something, you remember something from every match, you've done your job. And you can. Even the fucking Butch Coco shit, at least we remember Tito fucking, you know, raping, as Vince would say, raping Slick of his dignity or whatever. Every match had something special. It's the match that made it's the show that made this era. This fails, we're not talking about anything. We're not talking about this right now.
This is one of the first times they realized that, and people still debate it to the day, like that they're supposed to create like moments instead of moments are more important than like match results.
Yeah,
and this is the beginning of that.
Yeah,
which a lot of people don't agree with nowadays, but that's an argument for another time.
Exactly,
and we'll save that for another time. Why don't we wrap up? It's been a long show.
It's a 10. Yeah.
Okay, so that's it. WrestleMania 3 in the books. This is a blast to revisit and recover. Hopefully, we've done it justice. We've covered a lot of it on this show, and like I mentioned on Jeff Learns Wrestling as well. So I'm kind of threed out, but it was a lot of fun. So next week, Scott, you and I will be back with the May 2nd, 87 Saturday Night's Main Event. From there, our schedule gets a little wonky throughout December. Bear with us. We'll keep you updated. What's going on where? Of course, we'll have our Christmas Spectacular coming toward the end of the month, but in between that and you know next week and that's a little shaky. Scott, anything else you got going on main event this week?
We have a huge episode of main event this week. I believe we're taping on Wednesday. We're gonna have a full boat of characters. We'll talk about you know what's coming up with WWE and Clash of Champions and this Raw that just ended and SmackDown tomorrow night. And we're gonna debut a couple of new segments on the show. Actually, kind of more interactive to our listeners, a little bit of interactive watching of stuff. So it's gonna be exciting. So check it out later this week. The newest episode of main event.
All right, Scott did mention Making the Cut. Aaron and I did a newest one of that where we did a kind of a three-way mashup between Bret Hart, CM Punk, and Mick Foley, three guys that are going to be ranked on your greatest WWE wrestler ever list, but we kind of debated the order they should be ranked in. It was a pretty spirited conversation, so check that out. We've done 6 of those episodes. They're all up at PlaceMation.com. Balloting submission is open. The process is available now if you want to start submitting your ballots. The voting closes or ballot submission deadline is 11:59 p.m. on December 31st. So you have just about a month left to get those ballots in. And if you need any information, it's on the Facebook group or just reach out to us separately on social media. We can get you added to that or get you over the link to the Google Doc. That's all information available at ProWrestlingOnly.com and Kayfabe Memories as well. So check that out. Get those ballots in.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, then we'll be back next week. John, thanks for joining us. Hope you enjoyed yourself. Scott, I'll talk to you next Monday night. Until then, everyone take care.
Thank you, guys. Got to fire up some tea. Hopefully, there's not a tea ban in my town.
Tea ban? More like tea bag.
snowman.